Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports Puck Daddy Vlog, an oath presentation.
So I'm Dave Lozo, and we got the comeback. We got we got Vice Sports. Nah. I'm going to be doing something for Deadspin.
Oh, that's good, man.
Before the season, a little NHL preview where I'm going to talk some shit about 31 NHL teams. So that'll be fun.
And you're in Puck Soup. Just to clarify, you've not insulted any of your bosses without realizing it in the last calendar week.
So here's the thing about Nick Denton.
I have no idea.
Let me tell you something, Nick Denton. Never show the Hulkster's penis. Hulkster will come at you hard. I don't mean hard like penis hard. I mean just hard.
Barry edited the thing I wrote, and his one note was he's like, hey, can you just make fun of the fan bases a little bit more? And I was like, Barry, for you, absolutely.
There is something to look forward to. Yeah. Hey, before we get into all the stuff, and by the way, on this episode, we have Brandon Burke, who is the voice in the New York Islanders, talking about when he gets a chance to go to the bathroom during broadcasts. We're also going to do our full NHL preview on this episode, Eastern Conference, Western Conference.
Over-unders.
Over-unders as well. Mikey, over-under.
Dog.
So we got that coming up, plus listener mail, plus some talk about NBC and Mike Milbury joining the broadcast booth, because if there's one thing NBC needed more of, it was the melodic tones of Mike Milbury in your ears.
What is it about the stuff we all consume where people say, what do you want? And we're like, can you just get the Nazis off Twitter? And they're like, so twice as long tweets for only certain people. What do you want on NBC? Less Milbury. I'm hearing Mike Milbury during games now is what you people want. Done. What? Why does that keep happening?
And what's amazing is that the people that got a chance to have the twice as long tweets, the 280 characters, it's what it is right now, 280 characters, like, it was amazing to watch that happen this week, because it was like a bunch of people getting a superpower and then not knowing what to do with it. It's like all of a sudden you have the power of invisibility. What are you going to do? Oh, I'm going to go behind enemy lines and dismantle all the nukes in North Korea. No, you're going to go to the women's locker room.
I'm going to go watch girls shower.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened on Twitter today. It was a bunch of people, invisible people, sneaking off to the girls' locker room.
But everyone was doing the same thing. They were doing like the overly long joke. They were tweeting the lyrics to fucking Smooth by fucking Santana with Rob Thomas, but like they gave it out so arbitrarily. Like somebody showed a screenshot where it was like the name of the Twitter account was like Alt-Right Nazis Rule, and it was like, here's four things that's awesome about being white. It's like, how do you pick the people that get this?
It's become the leftovers. Like some people got raptured,
yes,
and then some people got left behind, and the people that got left behind are like, why can't I do the long tweets?
And both are terrible and shouldn't exist, right.
But the thing about it, we were talking about before the show, that's kind of interesting, is that like I'm not reading any of the long tweets.
No,
like, I don't care.
I can't.
The brevity of Twitter was the thing that I found appealing, and also the challenge as a writer to figure out, well, if I turn the word "you" into the letter "u," if I make my tweet look more like a Prince song title, can I fit in the idea?
If I break AP style and make this a numeral instead of spelling out the number word, I can do that.
Like you said before, though, now it's like Facebook. Now, like it's like when I see a 17 paragraphs from somebody who I'm related to, and the first word is, you know, in this political climate, and I'm just like, where's that video where they show you on the overhead camera how to make a casserole?
I know.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, oh, God.
Reading long tweets makes me want to pivot to video. That's the bottom line. It makes me literally want to pivot my life to video.
It's a conspiracy to make pivot to video a thing better. Like, oh, man, people won't even read 190 characters. We got to go video.
Once we're done with the double long tweets, no one will want to be reading anymore. Everyone will want to watch video, Lord Vader.
It is sad, though, because, honest to God, like, I see the tweet, and I can see that it's like a five-line. So I tweeted out that fake Patriots press release thing where they were
brilliant.
Right. And, like, some guy was like, this is long, but it's worth reading. And it was 8.5 lines in a Microsoft Word doc with, like, a 12-point font. And I'm like, what, are you kidding me? And then, like, 4 days later, I can't read a 280-character tweet. I'm no better than anybody else.
Oh! I'm afraid there will be 280 characters for your friends to read. Lord Vader.
Before we get into it, we should mention rule change just passed as we're doing the show formally passed. The 2-minute minor penalty for an unsuccessful coach's challenge to an alleged offside infraction leading to goals. So goals scored, you're pissed off about it, you challenge that the play was onside, the goal counts, and the team that issues the challenge that was unsuccessful gets a minor penalty for delaying the game in order to cut. It would be way too hard to just fix the offside issue in this league. We're just going to make it tougher for coaches and teams to use this contraption, which I'm actually fine
with.
Yeah, I'm actually fine with it.
Although the one way to solve it would be to just do what the NFL does, like scoring play. Everything is reviewed on the scoring play.
Right.
Scoring play, just let Toronto review the offside part of it. This way you don't have to challenge anything.
Right.
It's just... they look, and it's fine.
And
cool.
and it's gotten to the point in the NFL where you don't even give a shit. Like, it's become part of the game where somebody scores a touchdown, and do a celebration, and you're just like, all right.
You know.
You set your watch to it,
right.
And you're like, if I see the kick, then I know it was cool.
Yeah.
If I don't see the kick, then I know something was wonky.
No, it's different. No. Now, as long as they line up for the kick, you're fine, because at that point, they've already... The Giants-Eagles game, that one touchdown that the Giants had, they waved off, and people were like, wow, this ruins... Who thought that was a catch? We all know now that you get 1 foot down, 2 foot down, one knee, one elbow, your dick, one ball, your face, and the ball comes out at the end 4 minutes later. It's not a catch. Like, I never did I think that was a touchdown for Sterling Shepard.
I was at a Bears bar on Sunday watching that game against the Steelers, and it is astounding to me in 2017 how many alleged football fans don't understand the concept of the ground in the end zone. Yeah. On a running play, can't cause a fumble.
On a running play, no.
All that matters is that a speck of the football crosses the line. That's insane.
But, but people are still like the Lions play where the guy was clearly down, Golden Tate was clearly down before. Like, it sucks. The shitty rule, they had a 10-second runoff. But the NFL is stupid. We all know this. But luckily, we're an NHL podcast, mm-hmm. and that league knows what it's doing.
Yeah, and as an NHL podcast, it's, of course, time to talk politics. Now, look, Snowflakes. You can just forward it to the like 15 minutes from now, and that's probably when the Eastern Conference preview will start. But as many people are right now sticking to sports, us on Twitter, and saying don't talk about the Trump shit, got to talk about the Trump shit. Got to do it. Hockey is knee-deep in it. And listen, this isn't soapbox time. Okay, it is. I'm completely right about all this shit for years. Mm-hmm. I've been saying for years, the anthem is political. The shit that goes on at games in the military is political. Having Sarah Palin drop the puck at a Blues game and a Flyers game is political.
Mm-hmm.
It's all political. And if you're going to have these elements within the arena, you can expect shit to go awry at some point. Now, I've also said, and people have thankfully seen this on my Tim Thomas coverage from a few years ago, that visiting the White House is inherently political. Anytime you do a photo op with a politician mm-hmm. and stand next to him and muss his hair up and smile and glad hand and laugh at his jokes and whatever, Phil Kessel is the greatest winger of all time, is the best winger in the history, all that shit, that's inherently political too. And it's like the most wonderful part of this whole thing was seeing the grand awakening of people. It's like a fucking Matrix where they all realize they're naked inside those goo pods, that all of this stuff is actually political.
Here's what I love. So Friday, I think it was Friday, Trump calls NFL players sons of bitches, stand up, don't kneel, all that shit. Saturday, like 7 or 8 teams send out press releases saying, you know, fuck off, essentially. And Sunday, everyone's waiting for, you know, it's a full schedule of NFL games. They're waiting for all the knees, all the interlocking arms and protests. It's going to be an amazingly political hellstorm of a day. And the Penguins were like, we want to be part of this. The Penguins, at any point in the next month, I don't even know when they go to D.C. the first time, could have just been like, yeah, we're going to the White House. They chose at like 10 a.m. on fucking NFL Armageddon Kneel Down Sunday to be like, yeah, we're going to the White House. Like, why? Why?
To some people, it's because the media was asking them about it, to which you can easily say, well,
yeah, you don't need to.
We're just, you know. We'll say something when the time's right.
Yeah, like you know, we're going to talk about it as a team.
Our focus is on the season right now. We'll address it when the time's right. There, you're done.
It's
over. And yeah, you'll get asked about it,
sure.
But then you got asked about it by saying you're going too. So it doesn't matter either way.
But nobody was asking about it on Twitter at 10 a.m. when the Penguins. By the way, have you seen the Penguins Twitter feed since then? It's like the Cincinnati Zoo after they killed Harambe, where every fucking Penguins tweet is replied to with "Don't go to the White House." It's fucking great.
Look,
it's so great.
This is the deal. It's not normal times. The president called the predominantly black NFL players protesting police brutality by kneeling down during the national anthem, sons of bitches, and said they should be fired. And he said this as a goddamn applause line in Alabama. That's the thing about Trump that pisses me off maybe more than anything, is the fact that most of this shit that we have to deal with this president and this presidency is applause lines. It's playing to a crowd. It's not even shit he believes in. It's just trying to get a reaction from the people within that room.
He believes the football kneeling stuff.
You watch that. Sure. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. But you watch that Alabama pep rally like I did, and you see that line, you realize exactly what it is. He's playing to the room. He's playing to the room just like when he insults the media. He's playing to the room. Whenever he says this dumb shit at these rallies, you know, it's always about that moment to get that reaction. It's a fucking wrestling thing. So so he says that he gets that reaction. It goes toxic. And, you know, all of a sudden the Warriors are being disinvited from the White House and the NFL people are doing their thing on Sunday and then the Penguins do their thing. Here's the thing. I don't fault the players. I know that a lot of people are mad at Crosby. I know people were disappointed when Subban said what he said this week about not kneeling during the anthem and not having solidarity, especially after, you know, the day after Joel Ward said what he said, where he'd consider it or whatever. I blame the league, which came out during the summer, Gary Bettman via Forbes, saying that we want our arenas to be apolitical. We don't think that this stuff should be inside the arenas. And I blame the teams, in particular the Penguins, for laying down this edict. And again, it's amazing because Ron Burkel, co-owner of the Penguins, is a progressive fundraiser. He's a guy who supported the Clintons until recently. He's a guy that has supported progressive candidates. And it's clear that this comes down from the upper levels of management for the Penguins to be like, no, you respect the office, you go anyway. So it's the league and the Penguins that I fault. It's not Sidney Crosby, who, as we know, is a milquetoast automaton who will never step out of line at all.
Why don't you fault Crosby?
Because I don't.
He's an adult. He can think for himself. He's Sidney Crosby. Like, again, Colin Kaepernick's not in the NFL because he's not Aaron Rodgers. If he was at that level, he could take a knee and take a fucking dump on the field. He'd still be there. Crosby is that guy. He could do it.
I don't blame Sidney Crosby because it's a symptom of a larger problem, which is hockey culture. That's the problem for me. And I know you're going to say, well, it's on the players to change it. Well, it's also on the teams to change it, too. Mm. It's on the league to change it, too. Can you imagine if Bettman had come out and said anything close to what Adam Silver has done, you know, for the NBA when it comes to this?
No, because Gary Bettman should
Right, exactly. So it all comes – it's a trickle down to these players. Hockey culture is a logo on the front league to begin with. So that's the issue for me, is that the Penguins could have been the ones to be like to take a stand and not, you know, sell out their players by making this an edict that you know none of them are going to defy.
Here's a point, though, I've seen on Twitter, and it's kind of a good one, is so Joel Ward might take the knee and people are like, well, he's Canadian. Why would he do that? That's a slap in the face of America. And that's a good point because, you know, he's a Canadian and he only lives in America. So when he gets pulled over by two cops because his taillight's out and they pull out guns and they threaten to kill him, he can just yell out, I'm Canadian. And nothing will happen to him because that's how it works, people. That's how it works because he's Canadian. The issues of this country when it comes to race don't affect him, right? So he just says, I'm Canadian, and then the cops holster their guns and say, okay, you can drive on.
Like Mika Zibanejad, you know, obviously nothing involving the travel ban affects
his
him
family,
at all because
family,
he's
nothing.
Not an American.
Right. This isn't his issue. He's not from this country.
Yeah.
Fucking God, I hate Twitter.
No, I think the word is disappointed. And I know a lot of people looked at like the Joel Ward, the P.K. Subban thing, and they're like, oh, you know, you're disappointed. Come on. P.K. Subban, Sidney Crosby, the biggest stars in the National Hockey League, all of these guys are not going to do this. You know they're not going to do this. You know this already. Subban's made a career out of very carefully crafting a public persona. Oh, come on.
No, but the idea that like you just know they're not going.
Oh, I knew it. The second people started doing that PK Subban greater than sign Sidney Crosby stuff when Crosby just sold the company line, I'm like, come, you wait for it. Wait for it. Wait for the guy who has a Hollywood marketing firm hired to put him on the Nickelodeon Kids Sports Awards. Wait for that guy to completely punt on this.
Mm, yeah.
And the uncomfortable truth about all of it, too, is that it's not necessarily even a guy like Subban punting on it. It's a guy like Subban punting on it because, and this is going to make a lot of people sad, a lot of these guys are conservative. A lot of these guys actually believe that you can't disrespect the military or disrespect the flag. Like as virtuous as David Backus is saving puppies in Sochi, he's also the guy who actually believes that all of this Kaepernick stuff has to do with the military.
That is the worst part about this, is Colin Kaepernick takes a knee because he's protesting cops killing black people at traffic stops, essentially, and getting away with it, you know, like living with impunity, like no punishment. And we're here 12 months later, and Roger Goodell's on the cover of Sports Illustrated, right. Yeah. Arm-in-arm with yeah. Steph Curry. Like, yeah. No, that's
Jerry Jones is basically Malcolm X.
Jerry Jones is fucking basically, you know, Randolph and or Mortimer Duke from fucking Trading Places. Like, this is not – and that's an amazing thing, too, is, like, the right has totally blurred the line for what the protest is to something else, to the point where it's they're protesting the troops, the flag, yeah. the anthem, America. And now the NFL has – co-opted it and sort of branded it in a way where, oh, we're united. You're united about what?
And also, what's your unity about? It was amusing to see how many ways those teams tried to perform a level of protest without actually doing it. Like the fucking Cowboys come out before the anthem and do the hokey pokey, basically, and then go back to their sideline. It's just insane.
Like, if you go back and read the first quotes from Colin Kaepernick after he took the knee and somebody noticed it, because I think he did it the first time and no one saw it, and then he did it again and somebody was like, what was that about? And he has a quote where he's just basically like, you know what, this flag represents, you know, oppression. Like, he didn't mince words. He was like, this is what it's about. And so to expect that from hockey players, where the league is 95% white, 98% white, like, you, the Penguins were always going to go to the White House.
Of course.
They always were.
Right.
But it was just so weird how, like I felt like they didn't get together as a team to decide that before the press release.
There were three entities on Sunday that came out in support of against the protester and the anthem: the National Hockey League, NASCAR, and Donald Trump. So that's where we are.
Wait, against?
Against the protests.
Oh, NASCAR. Dale Earnhardt said some shit. He was good.
Yeah.
Everybody else in NASCAR said
that they would fire people who protested during the anthem.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So that's where we are as hockey. And again, like, my heart goes out to people that reached out on email and reached out on Twitter who feel completely dicked over by this league right now, because, you know, I agree with you, because when you get sold this diversity thing, this principles of hockey thing.
The Pope is just destroyed by this.
The you can play thing. And then you feel, oh, someone's actually listening to me that understands that as a fan, I feel really ostracized by a lot of the things that are happening in this sport. And they're going to make the effort to make it better. And then you see a team be like, oh, by the way, that symbol of all of the things you feel ostracized by, who soft-shoed the Nazis earlier this summer, yeah, we're going to stand with him and make jokey time with him.
It's just so weird how, like, they care about the office. It's an honor to get invited by the office. Like, why doesn't the person who's doing the inviting matter more? Like, the other thing, too, I thought of was, and, like, I never want to be someone who's just, like, when I see people who are saying, like, oh, we're going to the White House, I don't want to immediately just assume that Ryan Reeves is anti that because he's black. Who knows? Like, maybe he's not. But apparently today he's like, I wouldn't go to the White House. So, like, what's it like for Ryan Reeves when he walks into that Penguins locker room the next day? Hey, guys. So you guys
probably, like, it is every day for a guy like Ryan Reeves. I mean, that's the bottom line.
But to have, like, your teammates just openly be like, yeah, you know what? We don't really care about Trump's politics. Like,
yeah.
It's a
larger problem with hockey culture. And you cannot – the lesson to be learned from all this stuff in the last week is that you cannot rely on this league to be the moral compass for you.
Oh, ever.
You cannot rely on this league to actually practice what they preach when it comes to all this inclusiveness and all this other stuff. I mean, you know, they're at every turn when they have a chance to do something, whether it's fucking suspending Ryan Getzlaff during the playoffs or, you know, ensuring that the Stanley Cup champions aren't standing arm in arm with Donald Trump in a year in which the NBA champion, the NCAA men's basketball champion, and half the NFL have been fucking ostracized by the guy. You know, that's pretty much the baseline thing you can do, and they failed at it. So I think what we realize is that there's a toxicity in hockey culture. It has caused many of these problems that we see this week, and I do not fault Sidney Crosby, and I do not fault PK Subban. Maybe they believe what they believe. Maybe they don't. Maybe they're just following marching orders. I blame the National Hockey League and the Pittsburgh Penguins for putting their players in this situation.
I fault Sidney Crosby a little bit.
Of course you do.
Yeah, I have to. So the Austin Matthews quote comes out, right? And he has a bunch of gibberish about the troops and the flag and all that shit. And part of me is like, well, you know, he's 20 years old. So there's a great documentary about Billie Jean King that's been on HBO, probably because that movie's coming out. But mm-hmm. It's funny. Like, there's a scene where she's getting ready to play Bobby Riggs, and they're they're like interviewing other like women tennis players from the time. And it's like, Margaret Court, who do you think is going to win? And she's like, I'm for Chris Evert. And then it's like some other tennis player. And she's like, I'm for Billie Jean King. They ask someone else, Billie Jean King is going to win. And then like Chris Evert's like 17 at the time. And it's like, who do you think is going to win? And she's like, well, Bobby Riggs is a stronger man and he's going to win this match. And like they cut to Chris Evert in present time. And she's like, I was a fucking idiot back then. I don't know why I said that. That's Austin Matthews for me. Exactly. Like maybe like he just doesn't understand. But like Sidney Crosby's a 30-year-old man. And
yeah.
Did you read that tweet thread too from that person, which I didn't realize was a tweet thread until?
That's not there. I mean, that's interesting information about Cole Harbour, but not necessarily about Sidney Crosby. The last thing I'll say about Subban is this. Like, I feel like I can't imagine what it's like for him to be who he is and to have all of this stuff assigned to you from people who wish you were a certain way. You know, whether it's people who look at him as the only personality in hockey, or whether it's people that look at him as probably the most popular black athlete to ever play in the NHL, with due respect to Grant Fuhr. And I can't imagine what that's like. And I also can't imagine what it's like to go back to hockey culture, to be in a culture that does everything it can to make the quote unquote other feel unwelcome. Whether it's a black player, whether it's a gay player, like this is hockey culture, and this is the thing that we're battling against. And when it comes to PK, erring on the side of maybe he doesn't feel like he wants to be this guy for whatever reason personally, like I get it. You've worked your entire life to not be seen as the black player, and you know the minute that you kneel down during the anthem, you are not only the black player but the militant black player, and I can't imagine the pressures you feel when you have that put upon you.
And it's the other thing too is if he genuinely doesn't want to do it, like that's one thing, but like if he wants to do it but he's not going to because of that pressure, like I feel really bad
but
for
it's
him.
It's a conservative sport, so he probably wants that's what not I, yeah. doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, I the whole thing sucks. I just again it's one thing to be shitty. It's just one thing where the NHL is so proactively, aggressively shitty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like they're just like doing stuff and like, oh, accidentally being shitty and not realizing what they're doing, to like, again, to put that press release out from fucking 10 a.m. on Sunday.
Yeah. And here's the last thing I'll say about stick to sports, which people have said is impossible. And I think at this point it is impossible. I don't think it's impossible in the grand concept of sports, because I think at the end of the day, sports is entertainment. And I won't be thinking about this necessarily during game 7 of the Stanley Cup final. But here's the thing. I feel like there's a misconception about people like me and Lozo who write about this shit. We don't want to. Like this is I don't wake up in the morning on Sunday and being like, what can I write about the National Hockey League? Oh, I know, a 2,000-word piece about how the Pittsburgh Penguins and Donald Trump are intertwined. Like, nobody wants to deal with this shit. Dude, it's one of the reasons why there's so much goddamn anxiety in this country right now, is because no one wants to deal with any of this.
On like Wednesday or Thursday last week, Vice Sports was like, yeah, you can do your first NFL column on Monday this week. And I was like, great. And like by the middle of the day Saturday, I knew I was going to have to, like nothing could happen. Like Odell Beckham got on his hands and knees and pretended to piss like a dog.
Right.
And that was like the sixth most, because I had no choice. I had to write about what was the important thing to write about that day. Like I'm not knocking on doors like during the Stanley Cup final and being like, I'd like to talk politics with you.
Yeah.
It's just the thing that we have to and should talk about
right.
now.
So there you go.
And the thing too that I really, really want to drive home is this whole thing where it's like, you know, oh man, this is, I go to sports for an escape. I don't want to have to deal with this. The national anthem pretty much isn't on TV most times for games. If you're at the game, hockey's different than football. Like football, they do the anthem at like 12:50. Most people aren't at their seats yet. It doesn't invade your sports most times. What happens is the national anthem happens. Someone goes down on their knees. Then like the first whistle, they show it. 15 seconds. There it is on the sidelines. Then fucking some Tony Romo type makes some shitty, dumb, boring comment about it. And then the rest of the game is yours. It's a 3-hour broadcast. It's 2.5-hour broadcast. You get 2 hours, 29 minutes, and 15 seconds of it for sports. That's what you get.
If the national anthem means that much to you, okay, why not play it before the players come out? I mean, it's as simple as that. Like, if you can't do that, then you are admitting that the national anthem, much like when they do military appreciation moment in the third period, is simply a function of game operations and game entertainment. Mm. So if you really have that much pride and you really want it to not be tainted by all this protest and nonsense, just do it between warm-ups and the player introductions.
And the other thing too, these guys who are they're Canadians, they're not Americans. That's going to be the thing too. Now they're not Americans. Wayne Simmons, he's Canadian, right?
He is Canadian.
He's Canadian. Yeah. Like if he goes, if he goes to a knee, he's a black man living in America. That's the point you should really, really, really try to keep into your head there. Where it's like, oh, he. Why don't he go back to Canada? Because he doesn't love America. He loves America. He lives here. He enjoys it. He's a happy.
Yeah, he's in Philly, though. I mean, how much does he really?
Yeah,
love America?
I mean, that is true. That really isn't really the best part of America to live in.
All right,
so there's, so it's just yeah.
If you really want to get to the game and listen to the anthem, more power to you. I think we all can agree that it can be a very stirring thing. But if you really want to get to the game and listen to the anthem for the right price, you need to use SeatGeek, ladies and gentlemen. There it is. The first transition of the season of Bucksoo.
And I got to tell you, no one saw that one coming.
Uh-huh.
They're actually kind of mad at you right now about that transition.
I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I used it to buy Bruno Mars tickets for me and Ruby and couldn't be happier with that transaction. I could be anywhere with just a few taps. I can instantly find seats. It's a seamless mobile experience that lets you buy and sell tickets in just two taps. And better yet, by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and grading each ticket based on value, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats for the best price, fully guaranteed, so you can get closer to the action. Best of all, as you probably know, Puck Soup listeners get a very special bonus, $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code SOUP, that spells soup. And you get $20 off your first purchase. That's promo code SOUP for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. It's the best. Download it today. SeatGeek, ladies and gentlemen. Now listen. Welcome back, everybody who skipped ahead. You probably skipped ahead and heard the SeatGeek ad, and you said to yourself, okay, they're probably done with the Trump shit. And we are. It's time for preseason predictions, prognostications,
okay. And
all that good stuff. Let's begin in the Eastern Conference.
The conference that you put a lot of time into.
As you'll hear later when we talk to Brendan Brook. How many playoff teams would you say are going to be out of the Metro Division this year?
Oh, I didn't realize I had to prepare that much. I thought we were just going to do our division winners.
Well, it's up to you. Like what?
I don't know.
Okay.
Like so
I'll tell you how many I have. I have five. Five teams out of the Metro and three teams out of the Atlantic for the playoffs this year.
So I have the Penguins winning the division because they're by far the best team. The Caps are going to take a step back. Columbus sucks. Columbus actually got better in the
offseason. Is this 1-2-3 for you so far?
What's that?
As far as their finish, or are you actually going down?
No.
It's just you talking out of your ass.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's going to be 4-4.
4-4. Okay.
I'm thinking Washington, Pittsburgh. Carolina.
Carolina third.
Carolina. Oh, this isn't necessarily in order.
Okay.
And then I just – the Devils.
Who's the fourth playoff team?
The Devils are going to stink.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like – I think it's going to be either the Rangers or the Islanders. I don't like Philly. Everyone seems to like Philly this year. I
agree with you ultimately that Philly, although I think they've got some upside. Like, and I think a lot of it's going to depend on the stability that Elliott gives them in goal. And I think all of it depends on the maturation of a lot of really great young players that are going to put them in the playoffs at least next year, if not this year. Here's my standings for the Metro. Penguins, Capitals, Blue Jackets. And the reason for the Blue Jackets is that I like what they have up front. And the antidote to a John Tortorella team is great goaltending. That's why the Rangers made the playoffs all those years, because they had Lundqvist. It wasn't because of anything John Tortorella did. So I think the Blue Jackets will be good again. And then it gets kind of tricky.
Again.
Yeah, it gets kind of tricky. My fourth playoff team from the Metro is the New York Islanders. For the simple reason that Jack Capuano got that team to be in the playoffs or around the playoffs basically every season. And I think top to bottom.
That's not true.
I think top to bottom.
They missed like half the time he was there.
I think top to bottom. That this team is a pretty good team with dependable goaltending. Yeah. I like Eberle with Tavares, and I like Doug Wade as a coach. And I think that they're not going to take a tumble. They've gotten better. And so
have they?
Yeah, I think they have.
They lost Travis Hamonic.
So I like the Islanders as the number four team in the Metro. If I like five teams out of the Metro to make the playoffs, it means there's one more spot, which means it's down to the Carolina Hurricanes,
the New York Rangers and the Philadelphia Flyers.
How you disrespect Scott Darling in my presence like you do is disgraceful to me. That's disrespect. You want to talk about disrespecting something we should respect? That's Scott Darling.
Who's disrespecting the goaltender from a playoff team? The Carolina Hurricanes will get the last wild card in the Eastern Conference. The New York Rangers will miss the playoffs, as will the Flyers, as will the Devils.
Here's how the Rangers miss the playoffs, because...
Because they don't have centers.
I was going to say because they traded their best goalie in the offseason.
Well, that's just it, too. Like,
they don't have...
I'm assuming maybe a Lundqvist injury, which means that Andre Pavlik to the rescue.
Right. Like, that. Like they don't have the Cam Talbot, Antti Raanta
backup. Or Raanta, right.
Like, the last 3 or 4 years, the backup has had the better save percentage and has played a pretty decent amount of games because Lundqvist had, like, a throat thing or some sort of injury. Now, they traded their best center.
They traded their best center. I don't like them up the middle. I think it'd be very Rangers-y to go and get the big free agent prize and then miss the playoffs.
The MSG will turn on Shattenkirk at some point, and Rick Nash is going to look over at him and be like, "Yeah, this is your problem now."
Right.
I'll see
you. Got what you wanted, didn't you, Baldy?
Have fun, buddy. And so the Islanders. I think Bovada has them as like the sixth worst team in terms of like their chances of getting into the playoffs, but. Yeah, as Brendan Burke was talking about, it really depends on what their kids do. It depends on how they manage the Hamonic loss. But like, I don't trust them to be. Because think about it. Like, let's say it's January, it's February. They're 6 points out, which in today's age is like being 12 points out 15 years ago. Yeah, they could have John Tavares sitting there as a UFA in 3 months. Like, what are they going to do?
I'm not worried about that.
You think they're going to ride him into the ground?
Belmont deal announced in January. Tavares deal announced in February. Done and done. Probably not even be legal to sign Tavares at that point. I don't even fucking know. But Atlantic Division, if I'm taking five out of the Metro, which I think top to bottom is probably the best division in hockey. Would you agree? Or do you think that's the Central?
The Metro?
Yeah.
No.
Central?
I think it's the Central.
Honestly, dude, like I know I'm drinking. The Nico Kool-Aid. I think the Devils are going to be a lot better than people think they are.
They don't have Travis Zajac.
They don't have Travis Zajac, and they don't have any discernible defensemen. But up front, they've got two good lines, and I think Schneider bounces back.
Ugh. A lot of teams have two good lines. I don't know if the Devils are one of them.
Yeah, the playoff Islanders do.
Fucking Marcus Johansson. You people got so excited about getting a 60-point third-line winger.
What does that mean, you people? What does exactly that mean, you people?
You and David Putty over here thinking that all of a sudden you're going to go from 70 points to 98
well,
in an offseason.
Well, Putty's got a J on his chest. I have the M. The MJ. And then we got two friends that the 90 on their chests. Atlantic Division... if I'm taking five out of the Metro, I'm taking three out of the Atlantic. You want to guess those three?
Out of the Atlantic? Oh, you're gonna go Tampa. You're gonna go Montreal. You're gonna go Toronto.
Correct.
Yeah.
I'll take the Senators fourth. Oh, by the way, Leafs win the division. Leafs, Canadiens, Lightning, Senators, Bruins, Sabres, the Phil Housley effect, Panthers, and then the Red Wings up in the rear. I think the Red Wings finished last this year.
I think the Red Wings are the one team that might finish below Vegas. Like that's a that's a fucking bad. Have you looked at that roster?
It's not a good team, but they do have the we're playing in a new building boost. Get a little juice out of that for a couple months.
The fucking smell of grade D heat lamp cheese flowing through the arena. That's going to get everybody fired up.
Is that the end of Kenny Holland? Or do you think he's just GM for life?
No, I think this is the end for no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
I believe an exit strategy is already being formed, and that's why he's just like that's why he's just like, fuck it, I'm just gonna play hardball with him. My job's not on the line. Go play in the KHL.
Right, so
I don't
let's,
care.
Let, I mean, this isn't the formal like storyline prediction episode. That'll probably be next week, but. Tampa Bay Lightning win the Stanley Cup. Steve Yzerman leaves to take over the Red Wings.
I don't know what Yzerman's contract situation is, but I do feel like that's a possible.
Yzerman's contract situation is whatever Yzerman wants it to be. Okay, like let's be honest here.
He's not a mafia boss. He has to honor
the
contract.
Steve Yzerman.
He's going to roll into the front office and just start like cracking skulls. His knees won't let him do that anyway.
Mr. Vinnick, I'd like to go become the president and GM of the Red Wings. Sorry, son, your contract. I'm Steve Yzerman.
Also, a thing you're kind of forgetting is that he would have to leave Florida to go live in Detroit.
In a new building.
Who cares? he's there 3 hours a night, 41 nights a year. He's always moving.
That fucking franchise is going to be so desperate, they'll probably let him stay in Florida and general manage the Red Wings remotely.
Here's the thing. Tampa, I don't understand Tampa. I feel like Tampa could win the Stanley Cup or miss the playoffs. That team is A... hexed by a witch that somebody in the front office killed by accident with their car, because that team last year should have won the Stanley Cup. Had a ton of injuries. Steven Stamkos was a day away from returning for like a month and never did. And they still missed the playoffs by a point, where if they had just not sold off like Brian Boyle and all their guys, they could have probably got in. If they had gotten in, they could have beaten the Caps. Like, I don't know. I don't know how to feel about Tampa. I think Tampa's a playoff team, but I think my division winner...
I think we found your witch, by the way. I think it's Dan Boyle. Dan Boyle threw smoke bombs down to the ground. He said, "When I see you again, my pretties."
No, he threw the smoke bombs down and he became Dan Girardi. And everyone's like, "No!" Toronto, everyone's going to have a mild sports boner for Toronto.
Mm.
Toronto lost.
Like one of them riding on the bus kind of boners versus like a... You're with your hot lady kind of boner.
Oh, you mean just like a grooving, bumping, kind
like a
of
bump, a, like you're going over a bunch of bumps,
like
and,
a friction,
and you
of
can
thing.
Feel like just something's changed, right. But it's not.
It's just
right.
Yeah. It's just the bumping. Right. I don't think they're Toronto can miss the playoffs.
They could.
Toronto lost more games than it won last year.
This is a bad division.
It's not great. I think Montreal is going to win it by default. But like Buffalo, I'm a Buffalo guy. I'm thinking Buffalo goes from like 78 points to like 97 points.
I'm tempted by that.
I don't think.
What say you of the Bruins and Senators?
No, they're not going to make it. Erik Karlsson's missing half of his ankle. Why is that not a bigger story? He's missing a large part of a bone that like factors into how good he is, and everyone's like, he'll be fine. He's missing his ankle.
How did you recover from that? Oh, they took out my ankle. What?
Can you imagine?
They removed my entire ankle.
Like Corey Kluber shows up for preseason. He's like, yeah, I lost half my shoulder. Oh, yeah, it's okay.
Eric, correct me if I'm wrong. I am not a bone doctor, but it would seem you'd probably need that ankle. No, my leg will now float above my skate like a Pac-Man ghost.
Yeah! And, like, they're fucking dog shit when he's not playing. Like, they're just a completely different team. So I'm picking Montreal to win the division. I'm not happy about it. I'm going to go Montreal, Buffalo, Tampa, and Toronto as the four teams.
There you go.
And holding up a big double middle finger to Florida for screwing Jaromir Jagr. And not re-signing him.
Florida's a really weird team, aren't they? They're just a very... Again, I think that's a division that has a couple of... Listen, the Bruins could easily be ahead of schedule and make the playoffs. It's possible. I don't want to discount Boston. I like them a lot. I think they're
Zdeno Chara is 40.
Yeah, I know. And they're a bit of a one-line team.
He's older than me.
A little bit. David Backes.
David Backes, Krejci. You don't know what he... Like, they have Pasternak, Bergeron, Marchand.
Mm-hmm.
They have Charlie McAvoy. Boy, I'm going to fucking want to kill somebody over every Charlie McAvoy comment. Every fucking play he made in the playoffs last year was not the greatest play of all time. Oh, look at him hold the puck in the zone.
It was just Pierre.
But the Bruins are going to play like 12 times on NBC and they're going to, you know, God. But yeah, that division that's Detroit's going to be bad. Like, I think Ottawa is going to be bad in year two of Guy Boucher. They were a fucking -2 in their goal differential last year. They weren't good.
We're going to preserve and reserve. Reserve is probably the word I was looking for. Our cup picks for next week's show.
Yeah, we got to keep you listening.
Got to keep you listening. But I got to tell you, man, Lightning are a hard one to lay off. It feels like it might be time.
I just don't trust them to have...
Wisnowski worries me a little bit about being the guy in goal, but like, they're pretty loaded.
Like, Dan Girardi is going to play 20 minutes a night against a good second or third line at some point in the postseason. Like, he's going to get fucking obliterated. Like, it's just so weird that they signed him for 2 years. I don't understand.
I might pick the Blue Jackets just to make you feel miserable.
The Penguins are winning the cup again. Let's just cut through the next show.
Well, they have to get back to the White House.
How are they going
to? I mean, once you get a taste of that opulence.
When they go back there and visit Mike Pence in 2019. Or 2018. Whenever they do it. Yeah.
Hey, let them out of the prison camp. They get to come to the White House today.
What? We're in a country where the president is demanding people stand up for the... Let's not go back. Let's not do it.
We told everybody the politics were done. We can't go back. All right. There's the Eastern Conference. There's the West in a second. Brendan Burke, of course, is the voice of the New York Islanders. The Islanders are a team in New York, apparently. And
Brooklyn!
Hey, Brooklyn House! And their opening night on MSG Plus with Brandon and Butch Goring is the Islanders at Columbus October 6th. So do check that out. And here's Brandon. I think you'll enjoy it. He's a good dude with a better voice than the ones you've been hearing for the last 35 to 40 minutes.
Silky smooth.
Brandon Burke is the voice of the New York Islanders. The New York Islanders, of course, begin their opening night, Dave, is on October 6th against at the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Oh, you get to open the season in beautiful Columbus.
You guys sound really excited about having me on today.
This is how we always sound.
Where does Columbus rank in your places where you like to do games?
It is my least favorite place with a cannon that goes off during warm-ups when you're trying to shoot an open.
You just say Columbus, and instantly my mood is just like...
Yeah, you're down.
I got stranded there for 4 days after the All-Star game,
mm-hmm.
and I think back to like just sitting in the hotel room and writing, and I think about the there's a barcade there, and they have this drink where... It's like a Macho Man drink because it has a Slim Jim in it. And it was just terrible. This is a fucking Slim Jim doesn't go in whiskey, basically.
That bar.
Or anything.
Were you there the night at that bar? That was during the All-Star Game weekend. And one night at that bar, we were all playing video games.
Yeah.
One of the video games, by the way, was that off-road truck game. Remember that?
The Turbo?
With the Turbo, yeah. You go over the jumps and stuff, which was pretty sweet. And you never see that at a barcade.
That's also where Greg Wyshynski abandoned Sean Leahy. Because the bad weather was coming in, and on Sunday night, he got in a rental car and drove home without...
I legitimately got in a rental car and just drove home. And I was right, because they got stranded in Columbus. there was one night we were at that barcade place, and it was really late, and it was close to closing time. And all of a sudden, everybody started noticing that there was a dude at the bar. Remember this? There was a dude at the bar that was there. It was like part of some West Coast media conglomerate covering the Kings players or whatever. And he was just face down. And they were trying to wake him up. They were shaking him, and he wouldn't wake up. And legit people started to be like, holy shit, there's a corpse.
Wait, is it possible Dean Lombardi had him killed because he was making too much money, and they couldn't figure out a way to get his contract off the books, so they framed him for something? And
yeah, there was a note.
I think that might be what happened.
There was a hastily written note in his pocket that said, please waive me. That's so strange. what arenas do you like doing games at?
You know, I think, from an atmosphere standpoint, the Canadian buildings are always fun. And, you know, everyone says Montreal, that's the cop out, you know.
Sorry. Just Ottawa fan.
Calgary. But the funny thing is there's a lot of those buildings like Calgary, which may not be the greatest building and may not have the nicest press box. But where my vantage point is a fantastic spot to call a hockey game. So, one of the least favorite places to call a hockey game, honestly, is the new building in Edmonton. You're mile away from the ice.
I thought you were going to say Barclays.
No, we're so close at Barclays, which is awesome. I can read names off jerseys at Barclays because you're so close, which is great.
You're so close, you can't see anything. You're so close.
No, I was going to say, like, how do you call a game with a pillar right in front of your face the whole time?
The new Edmonton building I've not been to yet because they just became relevant again. But I went to the old building actually for the first time for Connor McDavid's first home game, and I was astounded because after the Islanders left Nassau, I didn't think there were any more buildings like that where you just walk in and you're like, ooh, the sweet smell of asbestos. But that Coliseum was like that.
And now the new one smells like urine because they bring too many people in the building and there's nowhere to pee, so they just pee on the floor.
Nowhere to pee,
the
right.
Sink. It's a great environment.
I was there in that first round of the playoffs where they were, selling their standing room only tickets to watch it on TVs in the concourse.
Yeah,
and I'm like, how
crazy.
Is this a good idea?
Seriously, how did they not think that through? Here's what we're going to do. We're gonna close all the women's bathrooms, cause that problem, and there's still not going to be enough anyway because there's going to be 40,000 people in a 20,000-person building.
I mean, you know what the answer is. The answer is, little year Canadian hockey. Fans, you'll stand and cup your hands and feed them, son, and then throw it over your shoulder like they used to do in the old days.
Did you do all 82 last year? How many games did you take?
We did 76,
yeah.
I think.
Oh, because of because
NBC,
TV,
yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So you stopped in every single building?
Yeah, I made it to every building in year one.
What's the travel like compared to the AHL when you do the full NHL season?
Yeah, I mean it's a chartered plane versus a terrible bus ride, so it's a win even with the long schedule. You know, we had something that the Islanders in their entire existence never had, which was a 9-game road trip.
I thought you were going to say a winger for Tavares.
Oh boy, I see where this is going.
What do you think about Garth Snow's drafting?
No, it's not going to be like that. Want to put it out there. This is not going to be you on trial for the alleged, air quotes, alleged sins of the Islanders.
Listen, I just got here.
Right.
I know.
He's like Jon Snow. who's just become king of the North,
right?
And he's not responsible. Or no, he's more like Danny. He's more like Daenerys Targaryen. Where right. Like, sure, maybe in the past things mm-hmm. happened. Not his fault.
No,
fresh start. He's
not
the
at
new.
All. He's the guy. Yeah,
dragon.
I think
he's
that
the
makes
mother
king.
Of
That makes Howie Rose the Mad King, I think, in your references here.
And ironically, Islander's mascot at one point was, in fact, a dragon.
Relative. Still is.
Still is.
Sparky.
Is it?
Yeah. You
can still, you I don't know hockey team mascots. They, why would I know that?
Why do they have a dragon as a mascot again?
I believe it's a tie-in from a long time ago where they used to own an arena football team as well, and it kind of cross-promoted the
right.
two,
no.
and it just kind of stuck.
It's actually Mike Bossy killed the dragon.
Is that right? With his shot?
And it raised the hex off of the team, and that's how they won four straight Stanley
Oh, my
Cups.
God.
So the dragon is there to remind right. them of great times
yeah.
past. Yeah. He
had to take the dragon's tooth and stab the Rangers' cup with it,
mm-hmm.
and then it freed the right. Islanders' curse, and they were allowed to have a dynasty.
Again, I just explained it to you. Why are you explaining it to me? I obviously know the history of the dragon.
I'm just a little upset that other teams don't adopt this our arena football team and is our mascot thing, because the Devils having a Red Dog beer mascot walking
Red
around
Dogs.
Would be pretty amazing.
Oh, they were the Red Dogs. Red Dog was the beer I drank in high school because I thought it just was cool. I was like, it's got a red bulldog on it.
You know, if you're an arena football team, you might as well just have a fucking beer as your mascot, right? I mean, adopt that aesthetic, right?
I mean, just commit to it.
The Philadelphia Four Loko. How did you get into broadcasting? Like when I was growing up, I knew I kind of wanted to be a hockey writer because I used to read the back pages of the Daily News with such great scribes as Bob Raceman, but. How did you know you wanted to become an announcer?
My dad's a writer, a sports writer.
So you knew you didn't want to do that immediately.
And he told me from an early age that broadcasters do less work and make more money.
Oh, my God. That's the same reason why I did public relations when I went to Maryland instead of journalism.
There you go.
Because I was told that's how you make money. That's what your dad's. That's fucking sage advice, man. That's better advice than my dad did.
Yeah, what was it like growing up in that house? Like, was he like a blowhard like he is now with the Flames? Or?
You know what? I get called Brian Burke. More often than Brendan Burke,
right?
By Islanders fans,
like you're a Burke in hockey, so everybody assumes you have some sort of
right
like, connection.
Listen, if I was connected to that family, I wouldn't have spent 10 years in the minor leagues. Let's
you're
just throw
right.
that out
and
there.
And also, the player safety videos would sound so much more melodic than they do now.
After review, we decided the skate to the throat was not a punishable offense. I'm Brendan Burke, ESPN.
Was it? Yeah, I mean, is it like? Watching a movie with a director when you're watching it with a sports writer when you're growing up and they're like, does he know where all the bodies are buried and telling you shit during the games?
No, you know what? It was cool because everyone asked me, oh, I grew up in New Jersey. I was born in Wisconsin, but I grew up in New Jersey.
Oh,
and everybody says, from Fairlawn in Bergen County. Went to Paramus Catholic High School. You know,
Dan Rosen's of Fairlawn.
He is. He
North
is.
North Jersey.
Yeah, North Jersey. Not the dirty what? Part.
Yeah.
But you know, everyone's like, oh, you were a Devils fan. I'm like, no, I wasn't. They're like, oh, what teams you root for? I'm like, I didn't root for any. What do you mean you didn't root for any? Well, my dad was a Yankee beat writer when I was a kid.
Okay.
And so, I mean, I would follow the Yankees, but just because that's where my dad was. And then he covered the New Jersey Nets when they went to the finals a few years. And he covered the Mets when I was in college. And he's bounced around. But so when my dad was home, we would watch a game as if a sports writer was home. So we'd watch whatever the most compelling game that was on. If it was a national game, if it was a local game, whatever it was. So I never really developed a fandom of any team in any sport. And so that was the fun part is that I grew up with that kind of upbringing where I wasn't a fan of teams, but more a fan of just sports in general.
So no, you have no baseball none. Allegiance, nothing, no football.
I have none. My wife's a Yankee fan. And so now my kids are Yankee fans and Giants fans. So like, but... Right. I don't.
Good for you.
I got nothing.
That's
yeah.
That's the theory about you. I'm going to lay out this theory.
Oh, no. Don't ruin this.
What did you announce when you were a kid? Did you announce when would you turn down the sound on the TV and announce video games when you were playing them?
No, not really.
Nah.
No.
Would you turn on the sound of real games and announce them as they were going on?
Brendan had a girlfriend.
You know that.
Greg.
I hear that all everybody used to turn down the thing or do video games, whatever, and I was the opposite. I was the guy that turned up the volume. Like, just let me listen to this guy. He's good. And,
drown out the demons.
Yeah. You know, but it's always just soak up as much as you can from whoever it was, and you know, I've kind of been studying broadcasting since I was 9 years old. That was always when I watched sports. That was my focal point.
So you're a Doc Emmerich guy, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Lozo's not a Doc Emmerich
oh, boy.
Guy.
Oh, I mean, I really do enjoy it when I can find out about a third line winger's birthday in the middle of the breakaway. You know, happy birthday to John Smithson of the Peoria Rivermen who turned 34 today. Oh, what a goal by Kane. Oh, my. Yeah, it's great. I love
it. He doesn't appreciate what Doc does, which is the incredible
mm-hmm.
ebbs and flows of energy in a game, and within it, even in a play, where he does that.
to say about all the wallaboard and play is stopped. You're just like, oh, where's my cigarette?
I believe the word you're looking for is cadence. Yeah. That's what it's called in the biz, if you will.
I used to always love when he would confuse Barry and Hossa with Andrew Ladd because, you know, they're both left-handed and tall and he couldn't figure anything out because the game's...
You sure you're not thinking of Chico Rush?
Chico Rush wasn't great either. Doc's just very old. Like, it's the game, it's a super fast game, and like sometimes he just has a hard time, you know. Oh my, hit the post. No, it's in the netting. Oh, it's
Doc, I think he put it in. He put it in right there. Nope, actually, it went into the crowd. Premio sausage.
Every NBC crew, present company included, is just such a much more pleasant listen.
Have you done it? You've done NBC.
I did the playoffs last year, yeah.
How was that?
Who did
you work with last year?
I worked with Mike Johnson for the first round.
Mike Johnson's great.
Incredible.
He knows a lot of shit.
Yeah. And then in the second round, I did two games with Joe Micheletti.
Okay.
Again, so more people who are good at... Like, seriously, the Doc, Pierre, Eddie O. Pierre, I mean, you know.
And I did a game last week, the China game at 7:30 in the morning with Pierre.
Now, you did that off the TV, or you were there?
No, I did it off the TV in Stanford.
And it was 7:30? Oh, my God.
Yeah, 7:30 puck drop.
Imagine it was better than when Levy and Melrose did that KHL game that I remember. they got a bunch of six-packs, and they're sitting in Bristol. The game's on at, like, 8 in the morning, and they don't know any of the players. They're giggling over not knowing how to pronounce players' names and shit.
I can't imagine what a wonderful soul you must be to have Pierre Maguire in your ear at 7:45 in the morning screaming about junior hockey allegiances for players that are in the preseason in China.
It made you forget what time of the day it was really quickly.
when you did it with Micheletti and with Johnson, were they both between the benches or were they up with you?
Mike was up with me because we had the interesting setup in the first round where we were basically piggybacking off the San Jose Sharks video feed. Mm-hmm. So we were just kind of, if you watch the Sharks feed and our feed, it would look identical. It would just sound different. So we didn't have any control over cameras or anything like that. So we were upstairs together, but then in the second round, Joe was downstairs.
What's that like when you have to deal with somebody who's not next to you?
You just kind of play it a little safer where you just lay out more. You give more space, let it breathe a little bit more because you can't sense when they want to jump in because you can't see them.
Right.
So you just kind of take a little bit more pause and give them an opportunity to jump in. If they take it, go. Then they're on. If they don't, then you just pick right back up.
Yeah, that's a different dynamic. That's like if you and I were in different rooms in the studio trying to do this podcast together.
So it must be like whenever there's like a... Here's the thing when I watch Islanders games. It's like, here's Brendan. He's calling the game. He's objective. And there's like a review where like an Islander player is clearly offside and the goal is not going to count. But she's like, I don't know, Brendan. I think that should count. I think that should be a good goal. And then Brendan's like, well, let's just see. Nope, they're going to wave it off. It's no goal. Like, that's my problem. I'm like you, where, like, when I watch games, I just want to watch and enjoy the game. I don't really care who wins. And I get it. Butch works for the Islanders. He played for the Islanders. He wants the Islanders to win. And it's every home broadcast, too, where the color guy is just so pro that
home
team.
You mean Ken Danico might be pro-devil?
Oh, my God. He's the same way with stuff like that, where, like, you know, the puck hits the post and bounces out. He's like, let's watch the replay. Oh, I think that's going to count for Henrik.
Looks like a bit of a tussle between...
Tear his head off! He's a flyer!
Fucking... You're watching a Caps game and Tom Wilson runs a guy from behind and paralyzes him. The Caps guy's like, I don't think that should be a penalty. No, I think he turned late. Like, I can't take that.
I don't know. How'd you see it, Craig? Well, I think it's about time this league bends over and allows the Capitals to have a little bit more leeway. No, actually, Lachlan's all right. He's not as bad a holder.
That's a bad example. Yeah, the Caps announcers are pretty good. But there's those guys that just, no matter what their own player does, no matter how dirty or vicious he is, it's just like, well, he's just out there firing up the boys.
How is it being the voice of the Islanders? You are... Okay, so in the pecking order, for those who don't know of New York sports, the Rangers and then other hockey things.
Yeah.
So you are now...
Like, the thing.
Person that people listen to. You're the voice in their heads when they watch an Islanders game. How's that been like for you?
It's mind-blowing to a certain extent. I mean, because I think you have to keep a small piece of you when you're in the minor leagues, like I did for 10 years, that fully believes that you'll get there. But then to actually get there, it's a weird feeling because it's still like, wow. I made it. Like,
what was that phone call like? Like, did you see it coming? Like, were you ready for it?
You know, funny thing is, it was slow developing. It took Howie announced that he wasn't coming back. I believe it was late May, like May 18th or 19th, and I didn't get offered the job until August 4th.
Do you like send a resume right away? Do you have like an agent?
I do have an agent. Okay. You know, but we have basically it's a performance based business, so you got to send proof that you can do the job. So you send him audio clips, basically which is what I had, which is mostly radio. And I had done some TV stuff on hockey. I had a lot of football on television. Kind of say, hey, I can do this with hockey on the radio. I can do this with TV on football. You figure it out. I can do it together.
Did you send a fight? Did you send a fight clip?
I don't even know it. It probably.
So that's gonna be the easiest thing. You got the entire crowd going batshit behind you, and you're calling the intensity of something. I imagine a fight clip is probably like an easy sell for an announcer.
In Utica, in a sold out building. Oh yeah, there's energy for sure. Yeah.
That third video where you were like Star Wars cosplaying, just to show that you're versatile for like between periods. Yeah, you gotta show them. You gotta show them.
It's basically like an SNL audition where you have to do all your characters and really. This is a homeless guy, except he used to be the king of a country. You know, that's what you do. It's improv. It's the whole thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, you send them all that stuff and then you go back and forth, and I wound up coming in for an interview, and then I wound up coming in for an audition and actually called the game off monitor with Butch at 9 o'clock in the morning in July in a TV studio, which was very unnatural, but you just kind of figure it out. But then there was 3 weeks where I heard nothing after that audition, and I'm like, oh well, shit. They've got somebody else that they're talking to, and eventually word's gonna get back. Once he puts ink to paper, I'll find out that I didn't get it, and I had literally written it off. I had gone to Disney World with my daughter, all pissed off, trying to forget about it. Like I was just like, you know what, this. Forget it. I'll do another year of the minors. We'll get through this.
Daddy, the teacups. Shut up. Yeah. I mean, I love you.
Yeah, no, that's great. The teacups. Yeah. Around and around we go all the time.
Happiest
chasing
place
our
tails. On So I come back, and I'm totally over it. I'm done. Like, this is not happening. And then my phone rings. It was like 5 o'clock on a Saturday night, and it's my agent. And I'm like, all right, here's the bad news. Like, it's 5 o'clock on a Saturday night. No one's conducting normal business. And my agent says, hey, we just got an email from MSG. And I'm like, all right, they're not offering the job in an email. I'm pretty, so I'm still expecting bad news at this point. He goes, they want you to meet with John Ledecky as soon as possible, the owner of the Islanders. Yeah. So I'm like, whoa, that just took an unexpected turn.
Like, whoa, Kate Ledecky's father.
Yeah, exactly.
Suddenly you felt bad about knocking out Goofy in the park with the right cross.
Yeah, so I mean, it went from I was completely over not getting the Islanders job to in the span of a week getting offered the Islanders job, and then it was just a whirlwind after that.
So right now they're in Brooklyn. Do you live in Brooklyn?
I do. I walk to the games.
So like so you're like. So when they eventually move, you're going to be like, look, I can't work here anymore.
Yeah, I'm done.
I'm not doing that commute to Long Island.
Let's see if I can get Iron Eagle off the Nets.
How many times do you get bugged about that issue, the arena issue? Do people think that you have inside information because you kind of, you know, are in the booth and stuff?
Yeah, I think they like to ask the question. I think just because that's the conversation that's been dominating, you know, Islanders fans for way too long. But yeah, I mean, I don't know anything. You know, I don't think anybody really knows anything, including the people that are behind the scenes trying to get it together, because it's so much, from what it seems like, rests in the hands of the state of New York, which we'll find out, I guess, what that means that means.
Brandon and I did an Islanders podcast this week together, the 100th episode of an Islanders podcast this week, and like, you know, we talked about the stadium issue a little bit, but it just sucks. Because as I was saying the other night, like, as a Devils fan, you know, there was a time when I was a Devils fan where the stadium issue sucked all the air. It sucked all the air out of a fucking Stanley Cup celebration because they all thought everybody was moving. They were moving to Nashville.
No, was it a rally?
No, it was Nashville. Oh, remember, Terry held up a sign and said Nashville, way. Right. And so, like, when you have an issue like that, and with the Islanders, now it's even worse because you thought there was a solution to the problem, and then you realize, well, it might not be a solution. Probably isn't a solution. It's just everything else that happens is tied to it, whether it's Tavares' future, whether it's, you know, your investment in the team. I mean, it's insane.
And the fans deserve better. I think that's the worst part, is the fans deserve to not have to think about the arena anymore. They should just be able to enjoy hockey. And they've been dragged through the mud for so long that there needs to be a solution to it. I think John Ledecky and Scott Malkin are the right people to get it figured out. They their heads, their hearts, their minds, their wallets, all in the right place. I mean, they're set up to do whatever is best for this team. They're invested in the team. You know, they're invested in the fan base. So I think that they're in the best position they've ever been, but they've got to get it done. They've got to get something done.
You haven't, like, looked at, like, apartments in Seattle or Quebec. You haven't, like, hopped on Craigslist yet?
You're still
confident it's looking
the around the here. I also work for MSG, so I'll be calling high school games on MSG Varsity if they leave.
Nice. There you go. You know, I think it's a pretty, I mean, it's like a lateral move when you go from calling the Islanders games to CW Post Football, right?
Wow. He's sitting here.
Yeah, I am here.
He can hear you. You know.
Oh, shit. I thought.
We're going to edit this out later.
Table. I thought it was under my breath. Brendan, when do you pee? I think we've all wondered about that with play-by-play people.
Rarely. Now, whenever I want, between periods. Yeah, you know, back. couple years ago when I was in a press box with no bathroom, and I literally would have to run down the stairs and into the players' locker room because that was the only place that didn't have a line.
What team was this?
This was the Utica Comets.
So when you were in Utica, you'd have to go run down to the players' locker room.
Welcome back to the Utica Memorial Auditorium. What you do is you record an interview that's 4 minutes. You've got a 2 minute break, 4 minutes, 2 minutes. You get an 8 minute break to kind of get there and get back. And sometimes you need every bit of that.
Oh, it's the old DJ Stairway to Heaven trick. Make sure you've got something on so you can go take care
of
business.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That is one of the best parts about our job is like you go to the bathroom between periods in MSG. It's like a national game and you're just, you know, you're doing your business in there. And all of a sudden you just hear Doc go, "Oh my, we're out of toilet paper." You know, like hear that content. Like my buddy covers the Giants, and he used to like eat in the cafeteria there, and then he would hear like Bob Shepard's voice like booming over like, "Please pass the salt." That was awesome. I can imagine that.
I still treat it like I did as a fan. Like I never went and took a piss during intermission as a fan because like, why? It's insane. It's Thunderdome. Go in the,
first box.
But during the game, go in the first 5 minutes of the period. Everybody's either now getting their food or is already back at their seat, and you go to the bathroom then, and it's lickety split, in and out. I'd still do that in the press box. there's only like one bathroom, and it's a bunch of 300-pound guys that have been doing this job for 100 years, and they're all in front of you, and they're like, "Oh, this is never going to happen." So I just go in the first 5 minutes of the period. You know why? Because the radio broadcast is still going, and I know I can go back to my seat and be like, "Hey, who scored?" And someone will tell me.
The better question is, what do you do when it's not number one? What do you do when it's
you plan accordingly?
Because I mean, sometimes that like a P, I feel like is easier to hold, and you know,
this is where this is going, huh? This is the direction this is headed.
Hey, I want you all to listen to the melodic sounds of the arena for the next 7 to 8 minutes.
And now Butch Goring will take over the play-by-play.
Football's harder, by the way. Football's harder because you only get halftime. Like, it's just one break. You got to go from the beginning of the game to halftime. And college football, we do four-hour games.
You were saying before that when you were in the minors, you had to do more than broadcasting. Like, communicate. Well, like, what else did you do there?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I did communications, the PR, the all that, community relations, social media, all that stuff. But I also did the team travel. I booked flights, buses, hotels, meals, all that kind of stuff. You're flying commercial and taking bus rides and, you know, booking meals at hotels and all that kind of stuff. Jesus. And somebody's got to do that. So it made sense for somebody that actually travels with the team to take on that responsibility, which is how I kind of got into it. And it proved to be – it helped our travel, right, having somebody that wasn't just sitting in an office booking it for fun because they didn't care where they put you at the Motel 6 because they're not on the trip. So that kind of helped everything. And so it was nice to take control of that, but – it made traveling stressful. When you're in charge of if the bus is late for the team and the coach is Travis Green, who's now in Vancouver, that does not like when things aren't exactly the way he wants them. I mean, that's of no fault of my own. If the bus is 5 minutes late because it blew a tire, but he's staring at me like I intentionally delayed their trip.
Hey, where's the bus? Well, ask Voice of Utica over here where the bus is.
Yeah.
And you just break down and snap. I do 9 motherfucking jobs for this organization. You do 1, so you shut up, Travis Green. I will bury you out here.
How do you think Travis Green's going to do as an NHL coach?
If he had a better roster, I think he'd do it right. I mean, that's a really, really tough job to walk into.
It's a pretty bad team.
That's a bad team.
Yeah. I mean, and he knows how bad it is because he had those guys in Utica for the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, that's the toughest part for him.
I mean, potentially good.
Right. You know, and there are some players that he didn't have, which are actually, you know, Brock Besser and those guys that might actually be, you know, superstars in this league at some point. But, you know, you saw guys like Dallas Eakins, just for instance, who probably could have had an NHL job prior to the one that he took because he didn't want to get put in an awful situation and he thought Edmonton was the right call. If I'm Travis, and I know he wanted to get to the NHL, but again, if you're the AHL coach, you can't really say no to the NHL club and still work in the organization. So I get it, but it's like, man, that's as your first job. Yeah. If you're going to be judged off this, if you get fired in 3 or 4 or 5 years or whatever it is, and you weren't be able to make it work because you had a terrible roster, you're never going to get another job again. I mean, it's tough sledding.
I feel like the league's forgiving, man. You think about a guy like DeBoer, Gullitson. Like, there are definitely guys that get that one mulligan of a job, and then they get to do it again. Yeah. I mean, Dallas is a good example. Yeah. Who hasn't gotten that shot yet. But I think that the league...
And one that I had in Peoria as well, Davis Payne, who got a job in St. Louis and has now been an assistant coach in 2 or 3 different places
in the case of, like, John Stevens, like, you have to wait forever to get another crack at
it.
So, like, I think it's a league that does give second chances. You might just have to wait the Gerard Gallant number of years until you get that second chance.
What do you mean, like
Drug on.
Remember the? Do you remember how long it was between Columbus and Florida? I'm not talking about now. I'm talking about
between Florida and Vegas.
Yeah, I was like,
yeah, Florida and Vegas was like,
he barely got out of the cab.
Yeah. All right, now let's close it off with what you think of the season for the Islanders. I was this is our season preview edition of Puck Soup, and I was spending at least 25 minutes this week trying to figure out exactly what the East might look like. And
oh my God, 25!
Sorry,
minutes?
I know. I okay? Well, no, it's about 10. It was 10.
Just went from 25 to 10.
It was like 10 actual work, and then
25 minutes.
I played Splatoon 2 for like 13 minutes. You're dying.
It's kind of easy to say that, though. I spent like 25 minutes on this.
I think
he was going to respect it. The guy works 15-hour days. He's going to be like, oh, yeah, you must have been really...
I feel like the Islander, depending on how you feel about the Rangers, and I'm a little bit sour on the Rangers, but I feel like the Islanders, the Flyers, and Carolina are all in kind of the same mix, and I feel like the Islanders are better than those two teams, but could be in trouble if one of those teams overperforms. Do you think the Islanders are a playoff team?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that Carolina scares me. You know, I think you said Philadelphia is the team that you think could see overachieving. Carolina, just the speed that they play at and the way the NHL is evolving towards that speed game, they scare me a little bit.
They got a goalie.
They got a goalie now.
They certainly do. But
I think at face value, the Islanders could certainly be a playoff team. You know, they've got a lot of eggs in a young basket. They need Matt Barzal to be a second-line center, which is a lot to ask of a 20-year-old kid in his first pro season. They need Josh Hosang to put himself in the Calder Trophy conversation, and certainly possible. You know, they've got three young defensemen that are trying to grab Travis Hamonic's minutes, and whether or not they can do that, we'll see. So there are some question marks. I think they're set up well offensively with that top line, Eberle, Lee, and Tavares, aside from having Eberle and Lee playing together for a play-by-play guy's perspective. As long as I've joked about this, they just can't put Bailey on that line, and you've got Bailey, Eberle, and Lee. The power play is going to be a mess, but from my perspective. But, you know, the coaching staff is great. They've got 5,100 NHL games and 5 Stanley Cups between the guys that they have in their coaching staff now, which is pretty cool. You know, in the goaltending, Yaroslav Halak has looked as good as he looked at the end of last season, and his head seems to be screwed on straight. So I think at face value, you're not talking about them winning the division, but you're talking about them grabbing one of those wild card spots.
Was it time for Cap to go last year?
You know what? It's hard for me to judge because I was only there for a few months.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, it was actually a question for Dave. Yeah.
It's probably like 2 years too late for me.
I think everybody, you know, you look around the league, every coach has a shelf life. I mean, even guys that win Stanley Cups, you know, look at Dan Bylsma. Like, he just, for whatever reason, it doesn't matter.
2 years in Buffalo, they were like, that's enough. Thanks.
Look at the expiration date at first. Like, oh, shit, look at that.
You know, and Ken Hitchcock, and just guys that continuously bounce around that are good coaches, and Gerard Gallant, that just, they have a shelf. At some point, somebody else needs to deliver, even if it's the same message. Somebody else needs to deliver it, and I think we saw that. I think that you can't. I mean, Doug Weight had 40 games and went 24-12-4, and he didn't change all that much. He still had the same play. You know, I mean, it just couldn't have. He didn't completely revamp the team and switch up all the lines and do all this. It was just somebody else delivering a very similar message, and I think that it sunk in because it was a different voice.
Before you go, Butch Goring. Butch Goring is not in the Hall of Fame, correct?
No, but you could certainly make a case.
I was going to say, how often do you feel like he makes the case to you? And do you think he should be in the Hall of Fame?
You know, it's one of those things, like, if you're not an Islanders fan, and I guess if you're not a Kings fan of a certain age, you can certainly overlook a guy like Butch Goring. But if you look into it and look at his numbers, and he's got 4 Stanley Cups, and he's got a Masterton Trophy, and he's done all that, you can make a really strong case for being in the Hall of Fame. And, again, he didn't spend his whole career with the Islanders, but not that they're going to retire 91 at this point. I think that's pretty safe to say. but he should be held in some of the high regard with a lot of those guys that are hanging in the rafters.
He was sort of the last piece of the puzzle guy, right?
He was the trade deadline acquisition that put him over the edge.
Your coworker has that case. Your favorite player, Patrick Elias, is sort of in that same boat. So I want to see you two fight to the death over who deserves a Hall of Fame more.
It's only one.
Neither. But again, we talked about it on the show before, my Hall of Fame is very exclusive. It's a very exclusive Hall of Fame. It's like the kind of club only Sean Avery could have gotten into during his playing days in New York. That exclusive. I think they're both amazing players, but they're incredibly important to their team's history.
Yeah.
But rising to that level of greatest of all time in this league, I think. Gillies would not be in my Hall of Fame. But I think you can make the argument, much like you do in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, you're like, well, how can you possibly have fucking like Walter Payton and a punter in the same Hall of Fame? Well, it's because they were at the best of what they did.
Right.
And for what Gillies did during that stretch, he was the best at what he did and played a role that was essential during that time period. And if you want to make that argument for him being a Hall of Famer, I think you can make it. There's a lot of people that use him now as the Phil Rizzuto of the Hall of Fame and say, well, Clark Gillies is in shit. You know, but I think, and Ken Neely gets the same thing. But I think you can make the argument for him, at least, that the, you know, for what he did, he was the best at it, so he should be in the Hall of Fame.
Can we at least come to the consensus that Butch Goring should be in the Islanders Hall of Fame?
There's an Islanders Hall of Fame.
There is, yeah. Yeah.
No, what I was thinking, if you put 25 minutes of work into the East, that's like a minute 15 per team. Like, you did nothing.
You can't even read the roster that quickly.
Listen, first of all, how much time do you think I spent on the Devils? So all of a sudden, all those averages go up. All right, Brandon Brick, you're a gentleman and a scholar. Any last words you want to give to the Puck Soup audience?
No, thanks for having me on. I feel like, you know, for a podcast that has Anthony Weiner on it and people like that, to put my name up there, I think I'm in pretty good spot.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, thanks for filling in for Anthony. He was busy this week, apparently, and hopefully we have to have him on again at some point.
On a collect call?
In 22 to 26 months, maybe he'll be back on again.
He's going to step away during the interview and be like, I just have to let someone know where I am. Wait, why? What's wrong? I just have to let someone know where I am.
I was picturing the serial intro where it's like, you have a collect call from Anthony Weiner.
All right, Brendan, thanks for being on.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you to Brendan Burke of MSG, the voice of the New York Island. Isn't it intimidating to be in the room with a real broadcaster? Like, we do this show.
No, I'm bigger than him. I could take him.
No, I mean, like, a real broadcaster in the sense that, like, he sounds professional. And we are stammering, stuttering, lispy.
Not at all.
No?
We're great. I have a deep, rich voice.
Do you think he has bigger balls than we do?
Oh, he's got a huge dick, for sure. Everyone's got a bigger dick than me. That's not really a debate.
The one time you'd expect a deep sigh and you didn't get one.
No.
Let's talk about NBC for a second. Two things on NBC. First of all, I wanted to just clarify something that my good friend, and by good friend I mean he hasn't spoken to me since he called me an asshole in the press box in Washington, D.C. Larry Brooks wrote this week. Larry Brooks wrote that that NBCSN and NBC are not going to broadcast any NHL games from February 7th to the 26th during the 2018 Olympics. Quote Larry Brooks, this is a network decision that several industry sources, basically just his friends in the NHLPA, over the last 2 weeks interpret as nothing less than the league's U.S. national television rights holder giving a symbolic middle finger to Gary Bettman and the Board of Governors for withholding its players from one of NBC's most important properties. Now, listen. This is bullshit, actually.
Wow.
Can we just talk about how much it's bullshit?
Lay it on me. This is all news to me.
All right. So let's talk about two things. Let's talk
about
I'm
like a podcast listener
right
now.
The NBC schedule, and let's talk about money. First, the NBC schedule.
Can I borrow $100? Oh.
Because of the time difference between here and Pyeongchang, NBCSN will have the opportunity to show live sporting events in primetime. They're going to be early morning events, might be like the prelims of snowboarding and shit or whatever, but nonetheless, live programs. The Olympic coverage on NBCSN, CNBC, all of the NBC cable properties, they all get very good ratings.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loves the Olympics. Guess what doesn't get good ratings?
NHL hockey.
That's correct.
Yes.
So if NBCSN has the chance to put on the finals of some Olympic sport that may draw the attention of a common fan mm-hmm. who might not otherwise be watching rivalry night between the Sabres and Wild, they're probably going to do it because that programming will get a better number than would hockey. But. So they don't care about not having hockey on. Now, here's the other thing about ratings. It's kind of funny. I don't know if you ever thought about this. When you have monolithic coverage of an event on all of your networks, why would you then put anything on that might draw eyes from that coverage? Like, for example, a National Hockey League game on NBCSN when you want everybody to be watching your Olympic coverage on all of your other stations.
Say if you have the NFL, right, your Fox – and you want everybody to watch a shitty Seth MacFarlane show where he gets to pretend he's Star Trek's Captain Kirk you put that on right after the football starts to get people to watch that shitty thing.
Not so much that, but I do appreciate your review of The Orville.
I haven't watched it. I'm never going to.
I'm saying, like, if you're HBO and you have the premiere of Assassin's Creed that night on HBO.
I watched that movie.
You want everybody watching Assassin's Creed.
It's not
you wouldn't then on HBO 2 put on, like, a new Chris Rock comedy special against Assassin's Creed.
I see what you're saying.
I'm saying, why would you counter program against yourself with NHL hockey on the off chance someone wants to watch that versus your Olympic coverage? It makes no sense. Now, here's the other thing about this Larry Brooks thing.
It's probably less that and more than more people are going to watch some Norwegian skeet shooter do that
of course
thing instead of the
hockey. Here's the other thing about this Larry Brooks thing. Okay. NBC is paying $963 million for the rights to the 2018 Winter Olympics.
That's it.
Now, let me ask you a question, Dave Lozo, TV programmer. How does one recoup the cost of buying some rights fees for a sporting event?
Friends reruns.
Close.
Seinfeld reruns.
Close.
Shit, what?
You sell ads during them.
Oh, commercials. Sure.
Yeah. And now, typically, and maybe you know this, maybe you don't, when are the better ad rates as far as the money you can make off of something? Is it in prime time or is it, say, 11 o'clock in the morning when NBCSN is probably running that show where the guy shoots ducks and goes in his boat and gets the ducks and then there's a commercial for duck shooting shit?
Well, I would say it's probably at like 1:30 in the morning when they have the sex phone hotline stuff, right? Like that's what I
when
see.
When I was in Spain, there was literally a channel on Spanish television, on Spanish cable, that I turned on at like 11:30 at night. And it was softcore porn.
Oh, same thing when I was in Germany for the Olympics. Yeah,
and
for hockey. Yeah.
And then there's like but it's like inside of like a larger graphic of like phone numbers you can call to, I guess, hear porn or whatever. I don't know.
Oh, no. See, like my thing was I landed in Mannheim, got to my hotel, and I was exhausted. And I was like middle of the day.
Oh, it was like you got hit by a Mannheim steamroller.
Oh, wait, hold on. Sorry. I got a pop-up ad suddenly playing on my computer.
Is everything okay?
But you get to the room and it's like soccer and like soap operas and all of a sudden it's just there's just boobs everywhere on my TV.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
Welcome to Germany, Mr. Lozo.
It was like a cooking show and it was just like no I don't know what it was, but yeah, they show a lot of random Europe's awesome.
It's a cooking show called Ouch, the nude cooking show.
Danke von Bacon.
Yeah, it was softcore porn, and then next to it was like phone numbers for like sex hotlines and like maybe like information about a flea market. I don't know, but like
what did they say when you called?
I did not call because of how expensive the rates were.
It's a write-off.
Yeah, okay, $963 million for the rights to 2018 Winter Olympics. You obviously want to be able to recoup that cost any way you can. Selling ads in prime time for the Olympics is the way to do it, and you can't sell ads for the Olympics if you have NHL hockey on in prime time. It's a very easy thing to understand. I'm not quite sure why Larry Brooks during this story in the New York Post didn't explore any of these topics. Perhaps it's because the NHLPA didn't provide this information in their email to him that he just regurgitated. But there you go. Stop passing around that stupid-ass Larry Brooks story. It's nonsense. If NBC really wanted to fuck the NHL, they'd put all the Stanley Cup Final games on cable, which probably would be a good decision anyway if there's a Canadian team in them.
But like, there's no way you're ever going to get me to believe that here on September 20... that the NHL was not aware of the fact that when they didn't go to the Olympics, NBC and all their networks weren't going to not show hockey.
Of course they knew
that.
This.
That conversation happened long ago.
Long ago.
They're not caught off guard by this.
It's no surprise.
That went into the decision.
Yeah. All right. So the other thing about NBC is that Eddie Olczyk, as you know, and swift recovery to our friend Eddie O, who's dealing with colon cancer, is out of the NBC booth. And to replace him, they have selected a young, a sprightly ingenue named Mike Milbury as the new color commentary voice with Doc Emrick in the booth. You're literally vibrating.
Just don't get it. Like, there's – how many people are there on the planet? Is it 4 billion? How many billion people do you have to pick from? Like, if you threw – if you took every phone book in the world and, like, pasted it like on the ground and then dropped a dart from space, you could hit somebody better than Mike Milbury.
Now,
he's not good at it.
I don't know if your plan is necessarily a good one, because that dart will have passed through the atmosphere. Because of gravity, it will probably be
almost like firing a missile. You'd burn all those phone books lickety split with, with the reentry temperature of that dart.
Yeah, the dart would probably burn up. That's probably not a good idea. So why not just pick – like seriously, if they picked Jeremy Roenick instead, that's a better – he's the worst person they could – Keith Jones is better. Liam McHugh himself, who's not an analyst, would be a better option to talk about hockey for 2.5 hours over three periods plus an overtime and shootout if necessary.
Keith Jones remains in the studio. Jeremy Roenick, Anson Carter will be rotating in and out.
Anson Carter's a better choice for that. Everyone is.
Who is the other person? Oh, and Brian Boucher will also be in the studio replacing Milbury.
Oh, yeah. Why isn't Brian Boucher the guy? Wait, they're putting Boucher in the studio.
Hold on. Here's my theory. I know your thoughts on Broadway shows. You hate them. I remember doing this very podcast with you once, and I told you that I went to go see Hamilton.
Musicals.
And you went fucking apeshit on me about how shitty musicals are.
Why are you singing the lyrics to me? It's 2017.
I'm not singing. I'm rap singing. It's different. I'm not throwing away my shot. Listen, when you go see a Broadway show, Christ. You have a star and then you have an understudy, right?
Sure.
The understudy,
if you say so,
is the understudy is never as good as the star, and that's for a good reason, because you don't want the person replacing your star to be someone that people were like, oh my god, this person should be the star. That's my theory with Milbury.
That's not what anybody thinks in Broadway. You want to have someone that can step in and do the job.
The star doesn't pick the understudy. You don't want the person replacing Mandy Patinkin to be better than Mandy Patinkin because you're paying Mandy Patinkin all that money to grumble and grovel like this and say, Carrie, you can't go back to the homeland, Carrie.
This is a bad analogy.
So you want the understudy to be good but not as good as the star. And so in my theory here, they've chosen literally the only person that will be fucking terrible at this to replace Eddie O. So no one will watch this broadcast and be like, oh yeah, they should totally keep Milbury on when Eddie O gets healthy. They want Eddie O to come back with a clean slate and everybody for them to throw candy and sweets at him as he comes back to the booth because they're like, thank God that guy's gone. That's my theory
theory is that Mike Milbury farts a lot in the studio and they just wanted to get him out of there.
Yeah, Jonesy, I just ripped another one. Oh, what's that? Barbecue chicken?
My theory is just that NBC doesn't know what it's doing and this is just another example of it. The simplest answer, what is it? Is that Occam's phone booth?
Razor.
Is the thing where the obvious answer is the correct answer.
It's Occam's phone booth.
Occam's phone booth.
And Colin Farrell's inside of it, getting a call from Keith Sutherland as we speak. Do you know who directed Phone Booth, by the way? Joel Schumacher directed Phone Booth.
The Batman guy?
The Batman and Robin guy, also the Flatliners guy, also the Lost Boys guy. He's had a very interesting career previous to Batman and Robin.
Boy.
And he also directed The Client.
What's The Client?
The Client was the Grisham movie with Susan Sarandon and Brad Renfro, the little boy. It was the one that came after the Pelican Brief.
Alec Baldwin's the killer? No.
Spoiler Dave, ladies and gentlemen.
No, because
I don't remember the movie that way.
No, Alec Baldwin's the killer in the Demi Moore jury
movie. Is Billy Baldwin the killer in The Client? Tommy Lee Jones is in The Client.
Oh, is he the killer?
No, he's never the killer, man. You know, he's the good cop or the good lawyer.
No, he's the bad guy in the shitty Justin Bourne movie. Jason Bourne movie.
Yeah, it's that. Remember that scene where Justin Bourne sits down and diagrams a play using video clips for Tommy Lee Jones?
Where Justin Bourne tells you about all the great Toronto Marlies and how they're the killers.
Remember that scene where Tommy Lee Jones is stalking Justin Bourne at an Islanders alumni barbecue? Anyways, so yeah, Milbury is your color commentator. I'm sure everybody is literally thrilled to turn down the volume that quickly when they watch NBC.
I would watch Mike Milbury in Hamilton. That would probably be funny. I'm Mike Milbury, and I'm here to say I'm gonna duel you with my shoe today.
I can't duel you with my shoe.
My name is Mike Milbury, and I'm here to say Jonathan Drouin's better than Sidney Crosby.
For those of you who know Hamilton, there's literally only one role that Mike Milbury can play, and that's King George.
Obviously.
It would be the best.
Yeah. That'd be good play.
Mm-hmm.
Good show. What's next? I was thinking of
lyrics, but I'm not going to do them. Let's do the Western Conference now in the second part of our preview. But before we get to that, sir.
See, I was trying to do it for you.
We need to give the rest of this conversation about Mike Milbury the boot.
There you go.
And if you wanted to give somebody
the boot. Not the way I was trying to set it up for you with the shoe thing, but.
If you wanted to give somebody the boot, you can do it with Thursday Boot Company. We welcome Thursday Boot Company to the sponsorship of Puck Soup.
You can wear the boots any day of the week, by the way.
Hey, Dave Lozo, did you know winter is coming? Just like that show with the dragons you like so bad?
Westworld?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're going to need a good pair of boots, my friend. And this season, you're going to want to get a high-quality pair of boots sold at an honest price and that are built to last. That's why I need Thursday Boot Company. This is a good ad because we have a lot of Canadian listeners. They still have winter up there, so they probably need good boots for the winter.
Yeah, they have feet.
It's a commerce brand that started in October 2014. They make beautiful handcrafted products in the same North American manufacturing facilities as the old brands your parents and grandparents wore that sell by 2 to 3 times the price. But these are not your dad and grandparents' boots. These are cooler, the kind of boots that you find in Esquire and GQ. So here's what you do. To get a pair of boots that will last season after season and get a pair of boots handcrafted with the highest quality materials and sold at honest prices, you get yourself a pair of Thursday boots. Thursdayboots.com is the address you want to go to and use the code FREESHIPTODAY, F-R-E-E. S-H-I-P, the number 2.
Numeral.
And then day, which will get you some free shipping for these boots. Check out the selection they have at ThursdayBoots.com. Money, power, and a great pair of boots are now only 2 days away, my friend.
Money, boots. Power, and boots. That was actually the motto of Alexander Hamilton.
That's right.
Because he wanted money.
And also Shrek 5.
Take away.
Money, power, and puss in boots.
Oh, my God.
I believe.
There goes that. There goes that ad read for next week.
Western Conference preview, my friend. I for a while, shocked and awed a lot of our friends in the hockey community by saying that I was going to take 5 teams out of the Pacific Division. That was partially because the Coyotes, the Canucks, and the Golden Knights are all going to be utter dog shit, and I thought that the teams ahead of them would feast upon them and their points.
Sounds like more Greg Wyshynski clickbait to me.
But I could not in good faith do it. I could not in good faith not give the Central Division 4 playoff teams. I think the problem with the Central and the Pacific, to be honest with you right now, is like there are basically 12 teams that I would love to see in the playoffs.
Who cares what you would love to see? Get fucking objective and make some picks, man.
Central Division. Your champion is the Minnesota Wild. Second place, the Dallas Stars. The Ken Hitchcock effect is real, ladies and gentlemen. Ken Hitchcock goes into places, and immediately these teams become 100-point teams.
So you're saying the Dallas Stars, the defensive sieves that they are, that still have pretty much the same back end.
They are not defensive sieves anymore when they have the grandmaster, Ken Hitchcock, manipulating that lineup and that defense to shore up the problems.
Manipulating it. They're not nipples. Like you can't.
That's why you throw Ken Hitchcock at a problem and then see that problem get pancaked.
Like when, oh God. It's pretty easy to be a good defensive team when you have Alex Pietrangelo, you have Kevin Shattenkirk, you have Colton Parayko.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the Dallas Stars back?
And John Klingberg. Mark Mathot. What's up?
Mark Mathot. John Klingberg is kind of the key. Like if John Klingberg is John Klingberg again, they'll probably be a playoff team. But if John Klingberg's, you know, remember when he got the braids in his hair that were super tight that one summer? No, he hasn't been the same since then.
And I think you're forgetting about Ben Bishop, who also shores up another problem that team. Ben Bishop and Kari Lehtinen, those two guys, roll them out, baby. Ken Hitchcock team, 100-point team, second place in the Central.
Ben,
are you trying to say they're not a playoff team? It seems like we're going on this Dallas Stars team.
Well, Ben Bishop was an .890 on the Kings, who give up 14 shots a game.
That's because he was sad. He was sad that he got traded from Tampa. He did not want to be traded from Tampa.
Well, he shouldn't have sucked.
I mean, point taken.
That's my point.
Minnesota Wild, Dallas Stars, St. Louis Blues. Now, the Blues were a team that I really wanted to put out of the playoffs. I'm kind of tired of them. But they're pretty good.
I've noticed you haven't said a team yet.
Good, 2 good defensive pairings. If everybody can at least play 60 games up front, which I think for the Blues is generous.
Robbie Fabry's already hurt.
Jake Allen will assume will still be Jake Allen, even though he won't have Marty Brodeur holding his hand anymore. They add Larry Robinson to make Colton Parayko even better.
What do you think Jake Allen's save percentage was last year in the regular season?
It was like probably like 9 what?
It's like 9.12.
Yeah.
He wasn't good.
He wasn't good until Marty Brodeur helped him find his smile.
Fucking God. I hate this sport so much.
You're asking about that last team I've mentioned yet?
Yeah, there's one, not Colorado. You obviously didn't mention Colorado.
They're last.
That's going to be a bad scene.
Mm-hmm.
What's the other team that you didn't mention?
Oh, I've mentioned the Winnipeg Jets. They're not a playoff team. I wish they would be, though.
I think there's one other.
There's two others I haven't mentioned.
Well, yeah, there is the other one, too. But
the reigning Western Conference champions, the Nashville Predators, and the team that they beat in the first round, the Chicago Blackhawks. I think the difference between those two teams is that one of them will be back in the first round. One of them will not be.
Wow.
And the team that will be back in the first round this year are the Chicago Blackhawks. So the Nashville Predators will go from Western Conference runner-up to non-playoff team, and the Chicago Blackhawks make the playoffs one more time.
You fucking coward. You're going to make me be the one that picks the Blackhawks to miss the playoffs because you're afraid of their fans coming after you? I'll do it. I have committed
to the Indian, my friend.
Here we go. Nashville Predators win the division because let's get real.
That's fucking stupid. They barely made the playoffs last year.
P.K. Subban missed a bunch of games last year. That was a problem.
Yeah, P.K. Subban.
So you got that. Minnesota, I agree, even though...
You think the Predators are going to finish above the Wild?
Yes.
A Bruce Boudreau team?
It's over for them. It's so weird to me how... Okay, so the Toronto Maple Leafs, they finally break through. The rebuild works. How are we going to get better? How are we going to become a better, deeper, better playoff team? Patrick Marleau.
Mm-hmm.
That's the answer. That's how we're going to solve our playoff issues. Minnesota Wild. Man, we can't get over the hump in the playoffs. Who are we going to get? Bruce Boudreau. That's going to be the guy that gets us to... So while I do feel like, I had Minnesota, I think, winning the West in the playoffs, they're still going to have 105 points to be a playoff team. Mm-hmm. St. Louis, same thing. They're just, I want them to not be the playoffs.
No, they're not a team I want to see in the playoffs, but it's impossible to say they're not going to be. I tried my best.
So you got Minnesota, you got St. Louis, you got Nashville, got Dallas. They'll find a way. Mm-hmm. I think Alex Radulov will at least have one good season before he's like, you know what, I'm just going to check out of here. This has been enough.
Abe, not the cowboy.
And
what?
And that's it. Those are my four teams coming out of the Central.
Right.
Back to you. Chicago lost Marian Hossa. They lost Artemi Panarin.
Mm-hmm.
They signed Patrick Sharp. There's a reason why Patrick Sharp's
mentioned that Brandon Saad's in the team now.
Like, look, as somebody who watches Friends and Seinfeld reruns all day, I love to live in the past myself. Panarin for Saad was a really bad... Artemi Panarin's really, really good. That's why Columbus, like, I think Columbus is...
You know this how? You know this? You watch a lot of KHL?
Oh, dude, I have the KHL package. It's only 25 rubles a month.
KHL Sunday ticket.
Let me ask you this. What would you rather have? Would you rather have...
A hundred small ducks versus one...
Would you rather walk 500 miles or walk 500? Would you rather have Jaromir Jagr on an NHL team this year that doesn't make the playoffs so you can kind of watch him on TV a little bit, see a couple live games, not in the NHL at all, but you get to watch him in the Olympics?
Yeah. Where's the other? You said, would you rather have?
Would you rather have him in the NHL?
Oh, to not watch him? I want him in the NHL. I don't want him in the Olympics.
So you'd rather, even if he's on a crappy team that misses the playoffs, you'd rather have that than get to watch him for 2 weeks in the Olympics?
Correct. I want the victory lap. I want a chance for everybody to go out and celebrate Jagr.
But it's not going to be a victory lap if he's on, like, Detroit.
Plus, I'm not going to be even watching the Olympics because they're going to be up against the NHL, and I got to see my NHL hockey, NBC.
But I think the Blackhawks have a genuinely good chance at missing the playoffs.
Sure. I do, too. I don't pick this Predators thing with any confidence. I feel like the loss of Ryan Ellis is going to impact them. I think there's going to be a certain hangover over what happened last year.
Oh, right, Ryan Ellis.
I think there's going to be issues. I mean, you know, the Bonino signing, like there's a lot of little things that have changed
about
this team. And so, like, the team I struggled most with, to be honest with you, is Winnipeg. Like, what if the Steve Mason thing shores up the goaltending, and all of a sudden you've got, you know, some really good offensive players, you've got some decent – but then the Paul Maurice thing is the thing that always gives me pause.
Cause yeah.
As I was telling somebody from Winnipeg today, it's like, this should be the year where they miss the playoffs and then fire the coach. Except it just doesn't seem like they're ever going to fire the coach.
Working for Kevin Cheveldayoff seems great.
Fucking great, right?
Man.
Yeah.
He's never going to pivot to video. He's just going to keep paying me no matter how mediocre I am.
At this point, I'm pretty sure Paul Maurice could coach an entire game with his dick out, and like Cheveldayoff's going to be like, good moxie.
Kevin Cheveldayoff should be the guy that like runs the Star Wars franchise now, where he just doesn't fire anybody. He's just like, yeah, you can direct it. That's fine. I don't care.
Yeah. The Star Wars franchise is basically being run by Lou Lamoriello circa 1998, right, at this point.
Error, looks like you don't get Han Solo quite well. Error, you're fired. Error, I told you. No Ewoks. You're fired.
Whenever you start doing that, I think you're a malfunctioning robot saying error. And then I realize what you're doing. Like, oh, right.
Error, come here.
Yeah, Mr. Lamoriello, what's up?
You guys did 21 Jump Street?
Yeah, we're on the Han Solo movie.
No, you're not. Robbie Fatorik is.
Oh, God. Have you seen the movie Jackie yet with Natalie Portman? No, I was going to say because Peter Sarsgaard slips into that accent once in a while. So, like, I want to watch
That's
you
great.
Watch that movie.
I am a Kennedy.
yes, you are a Kennedy. I am Jacqueline Kennedy, and I miss Jackie.
That's my Jackie impression.
I'm Jackie.
What?
Jackie.
I know that's how she talked, but it just I don't know why like Natalie Portman thought that she could pop like that's a total like Oscar role. Who gives a shit about that story? But like you take that role to win an Oscar. But no one's gonna take that role seriously.
I mean, you talk like this and everybody knows you're just trying to do the best impression that you can.
All right, do your impression of Jackie talking to Latka from Taxi. Let's see if we can make out the two.
Excuse me, my name is Jackie. Is this cab open?
This cab is not open.
Luck is also my German impression. I just realized. Goddamn, 12 impressions.
Suddenly he's doing Hogan's Heroes. Oh man!
Did I ever tell you the funniest line in the history of the show Taxi? This, without question, the funniest line I've ever heard.
What is it?
And I didn't know this. I didn't know what this meant when I was a kid when I saw it, and my dad explained it. So apparently, have you heard of you know what the phrase Taiwan on means?
Yeah, get drunk.
I didn't realize that at the time. So there's a scene in Taxi where Judd Hirsch's character says to Christopher Lloyd's character, hey, you want to go Taiwan on? And Christopher Lloyd's character goes, no, I don't like Chinese food. Taiwan on.
Oh, I get it.
And he called it Chinese food.
I took a second. I was like, wait, Taiwan on.
All right. So, who do you like? Who's your playoff teams out of the Central again?
It's all your usual suspects. We're bumping Dallas in for Chicago and then Minnesota, St. Louis, Nashville. Nashville's winning the division.
Okay. Pacific Division, I tried to get five, couldn't do it, got four. Ducks will win the division despite their coach.
Yeah, that division, I feel like that's going to be the division where the team wins it by like 19 points.
Oilers second. The Kings third, a healthy Jonathan Quick.
Oh God!
A new coach, a new philosophy. The reins being sliced off these players.
Who's their new coach again?
John Stevens.
Oh,
good coach.
That's right. Yeah.
And then the Sharks are my other playoff team. It breaks my fucking heart to not have the Calgary Flames in the playoffs, but they won't be. And then Coyotes, Canucks, and I actually think the Golden Knights. Despite my previous protestations on this podcast, we'll be last in the division.
Christ, I don't understand. Like, just commit to that. Just commit to the bit for a full season. This way, like, if Vegas is like in the wild card spot in May,
I have a new bit.
October,
I have a new bit that Nico Hischier is going to win the Art Ross. And again, I say to all of my professional hockey writers association brothers and sisters, just when Nico wins the Art Ross, you can still give him the Selke. It's just no rule that says you can't.
You and Travis Yost that day on Twitter. He had like a 13 tweet thread about how the Buffalo Bills were going to make the playoffs. And suddenly you pop in with like, listen, when Nico wins the Art Ross, don't forget he's a tremendous two-way player.
Just think about how all those tweets now can be in one tweet. like Travis will never have to thread anything ever again. Isn't that great?
Okay, so my Pacific is kind of the same thing. I think Anaheim, kind of by default. I don't even think Anaheim is good.
I think their back end's really
good. Their defense
good.
Is really,
and I'm,
really good.
And I'm interested, you know, like, Corey, it's interesting how Corey Perry and Ovechkin both seem to have lost their mojo around the same time. And I'm wondering which guy has the bigger bounce back here.
I think Perry. I think Ovechkin's kind of done-ish.
He might be a second liner.
He's kind of done-ish, and he's going to be in a pissy mood all fucking season about the Olympics. Like, that's a bad mix for a dude at this point in his career, man. Like, right. You know, I just...
Well, he could always just, you know, sit back and think about all the championships. I mean...
Still can't believe they didn't blow the team up this offseason, but...
Blow the team up.
Anaheim, you're right. The back end's fine enough. John Gibson was pretty good all season. They'll squeeze out another 100.
Silverberg's really
points.
Good. Silverberg's the next Alfredson.
Silverberg. It's Christmas time. And then San Jose. I think San Jose is still going to be good, even though they let Marlowe go, and he was kind of their old guy that could score goals. Then Edmonton. Edmonton's going to finish third.
Okay.
And then the wild card team.
So you think four out of this division?
4-4.
So you're taking Calgary over the Kings?
Nope.
You're taking the Coyotes?
I take the Coyotes.
All right. Why?
I don't know. They got rid of Mike Smith. I think that can only help them.
Do you think
to play more games?
You think Tockett's got a few grand on him and he'll just motivate the players any way he can to make sure that he gets his vig back?
They got Jason Demers for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like Max Domi, Anthony Duclair, all these guys that shit the bed last year, I think they're going to bounce back. And mm-hmm. and I just think, like, the Kings, man, like, I that's over, man. Like, that window is closed. Nope. Calgary.
One more year.
I want Calgary to be
You don't
be
think
shitty.
Having a full season of Jonathan Quick instead of fucking Peter Budaj is going to be better? That they're going to be a better team because of that?
Wait, you realize how good Peter Budaj was when Jonathan Quick wasn't there last
I realize
year, right?
What, like, Peter Budaj's numbers are, but I realize that psychologically there's a difference between having fucking Peter Budaj back there and Jonathan Quick back there.
Oh, so it's more about the heart and the brain.
The intangible
numbers.
Things
oh
that you can't... Oh, by the way, here's something that we should probably talk about real quick.
Oh, what's something happened?
It's important.
Oh, no.
And this might affect maybe our Blues pick. Robbie Fabry's out for the entire season.
Oh, for the whole season.
His left knee. Yeah.
Well, look at that.
All right. So in hindsight, maybe St. Louis here.
Well, but fuck them.
Minnesota, Dallas, and the Blackhawks, and then either the Blues or the Predators. There's my official pick.
Either the Blues
or the Predators.
Way to really commit to something that doesn't matter with a soft prediction like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Robbie Fabry out for the season. That really sucks, man. That sucks big time.
So here's my cause for the show for this season.
Okay.
We should all root against the Calgary Flames.
Because of Mike Smith?
Because if the team is really shitty, the people there won't feel like they're going to be held hostage and have to pay to keep them there.
I like it.
Like, the shittier the team is,
yeah,
the more the ownership's going to have to fucking cave on their stupid demands.
I kind of like it.
So, like, if they're 5-26-7 and they're like, we need $225 million for the deal, like, no, people are going to be like, no, fuck off. And then they'll be like, all right, fine, we'll pay for it ourselves. And then they can win a bunch of games.
All right, so Minnesota, Dallas, the Blackhawks and the Predators and the Blues are out now. It's my formal pick.
So the whole season was hanging on how many games Robbie Fabry played? Jesus. It's not Connor McDavid.
The Central Division is subject to change. Just leave it at that.
We're going to do a whole entire show next week where you're going to change everything. Like, okay, I've thought about it, and Robbie Fabry's 23 goals are probably not enough to change my pick. I'm actually going to...
Maybe the Blues will still make it.
I think they'll still be fine.
They probably will.
I mean, actually...
Uh-oh. What's this now? You got some second thoughts, too?
I feel like the heart wants the Blackhawks to really not make the playoffs.
But the head says that they're going to have two good lines now because Kane's going to make the printed cat's going to be fine, and whatever the fuck his name was. And then the second line's going to be fine because Taves has his boy back. You know?
Like, they would have to hemorrhage.
They still have a pretty good goalie. Duncan Keith still has something left.
They'd have to hemorrhage 19 points from their total. Yeah. But they weren't that. They were so much not. Their record was so much better than how well they played.
Mm.
Corey Crawford doesn't have the number one goalie behind him anymore. So now he's got no support system. No, fuck it. I stick to it. The Blues are going to make the playoffs for Robbie Fabry. How about that?
Oh, I like it.
How about that?
I think that's a pretty good thought.
First for Fabry. Okay. Hashtag brand synergy.
All right. There you go. So those are our predictions. We'll do formal cup and conference championship predictions next week. But for now, it's time to dip into the Puck Soup mailbag.
Let's dip.
And find out what people are saying. Megan wants to know, which franchise wins a cup first, Vancouver or Vegas?
Oh, my God.
Vegas.
Well, okay. So, well, the thing is with Vegas, you have to throw away the first 5 years where George McPhee is going to fuck up everything like he already has. It's amazing how Dave Lozo back in June was like, man, they drafted way too many defensemen. They probably could have got someone. No, the defensemen are all going to be valuable. In now fairness, they're stuck with like 11 of them.
In fairness, George McPhee.
He's a doofus.
It will draft really well, and then when they get really close to contending, never trade anybody, and then finally make a horrible trade.
Yeah, I know. That'll be like, you know what? Philip Forsberg Jr., we got to get rid of this guy and then watch him score 30.
I would say Vegas has a better chance of winning a cup than Vancouver, only because they're further along in their rebuild. Vancouver still has to say goodbye to the Twins.
That's another stupid thing about this sport where the fucking Twins get stuck there for the rest of their career, even though they've been, the writing's been on the wall for 3 years.
And Twins!
I love missing the playoffs, signing Ryan Miller.
And Twins!
And Twins!
Scott the Noon wants to know, does Sidney Crosby like the TV show Young Sheldon?
Well, there's...
Yeah. I think he does because it's a show about a brilliant kid. Which, of course, Sidney Crosby is and was.
He likes Sex Ambassador, so yeah, he likes Young Sheldon.
Yeah. Oh, there's no... Oh, Sidney Crosby is binging Big Bang Theory on that team play.
Yeah, he absolutely... And, like, there's some poor bastard sitting next to him who's just like, can we please fucking watch... Can we watch The Americans, please? Like, I just want to see how the episode ends. And he's just like, no, it's hilarious. And this one, the nerds almost have sex.
Yeah, no, man. Hey, Sheldon just proposed to Blossom.
Those two bang on the show? I thought he was with
Johnny Galecki's with the blonde.
Oh,
right. And then he's with Blossom.
Yeah. But there's another, isn't there another nerd?
There's two other nerds.
One of the nerds, but there's like another female male nerd connection on that show, isn't there?
There is.
I think so. Like Big Bang. Everything I know about Big Bang is just like, it's like the 45 seconds it's on when like Seinfeld ends and that starts.
And also there's t-shirts all over New York that say Bazinga. You know that as well.
I can't believe they put the Bazinga guy in fucking...
Ultimate Predator wants to know, will Wish ever acknowledge my existence past the meet and greet at Tailgate Beer? No.
Oh yeah, I saw that. Like that's a creepy question to ask somebody. Why won't you talk to me?
I saw Ultimate Predator twice, man. I saw him at the meetup that we had in Nashville. Then we saw each other again while he was walking around taking pictures of people outside the arena.
Yeah, but like, so like he wants more from you? Like,
well,
that's...
I mean, I'm trying to avoid him because the Predators aren't making the playoffs this year, so I don't want him to yell at me or body slam me or give me the spear.
Is this acknowledge? Is this like a bit you guys have?
No.
You see each other? Oh, that's
a bit.
Oh, so it is kind of weird that he's asking you
where
you are.
It's weird at all. He's a guy who dresses in a Predator's jersey and a Luchador mask. I don't know what's weird about that.
And wants to know where you are
at all times
because you don't give him enough attention. Yeah, that's not scary.
This is from Nehemi 11. Is it possible that Austin Matthews is actually underrated given all the deserved attention on McDavid? he says it's preferably answered by Bevs.
Oh, you know. Austin Matthews does a lot of good stuff, like his gem, like his grit. Connor's a hell of a player, too. But given the choice, probably go with my guy.
We got to screen these questions. This guy asking if Austin Matthews is underrated. Come on. Come on, man.
Austin Matthews is, this is the wrong week to ask that question when Austin Matthews, according to TSN, is the 10th best player, skater, or goalie in the NHL.
Like, where did he finish in the Hart last year? 6th, 7th, something like that? Like
10th best player. In the NHL.
Is he underrated?
How'd you feel? My beef with that TSN list is that Drysdale was number 24. What'd you think about that list?
You're out of your mind if you think I clicked on that list. I don't want to read that. I don't care.
Roman Petrov wants to know, what's the greatest film ever made and why is it Boogie Nights?
Ugh.
Boogie Nights, I still think, is the best P.T. Anderson film. I'm not a huge P.T. Anderson. Like, I know There Will Be Blood has a lot of people that love that movie.
I like Magnolia a lot.
I fucking hated Magnolia. Boogie Nights is an American classic. But it's not the greatest movie ever made because at the end of the day, it's just derivative of Scorsese, even though it's fantastic.
I enjoy all the Don Cheadle scenes. I enjoy all the Philip Seymour Hoffman scenes. Mm-hmm. I enjoy all the William H. Macy scenes.
Uh-oh. I think we're getting to the core of the problem.
Right. It's just like, again, we've talked about this a million times. Like, Mark Wahlberg is great in that because he has to be a shitty actor, and he is a shitty actor, so it all works together. But after a while, like, there's so many great scenes in that movie, mm-hmm. like the firecrackers and the
with Alfred Molina at the end.
Like, there's a lot of great stuff in it, but
that really it gets so dark as it goes on. Like, that entire cutting back and forth between Wahlberg and that dude in that truck, and then Roller Girl doing like the bang limo stuff limo with that stuff, other guy. Yeah, that's super squirmy.
All right, I'm going to read you one from the direct messages.
Please.
Because this is directly for you. We never do the DM questions because we never look in there. Gil Silva, who goes by Depressing Guy on Twitter. I was wondering what Greg thought of the machete cut for Star Wars, which you should probably explain what
that
is.
The machete cut for Star Wars, for those who don't know, is a particular order on how to watch the films. So everybody, you know. The movies, you know, came out. You got your episodes 1, 2, 3, 4, yada yada yada. I think the machete cut is, so it's Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. Then it's Empire, and then you cut back to Attack of the Clones, and then you watch Revenge of the Sith. And then you watch Jedi. So it gets rid of the Phantom Menace. And it's A New Hope, Empire, I Am Your Father. And then you go back and you see Clones, and then you watch Revenge of the Sith, and then you watch Jedi. And I don't know if you've heard this on this podcast, but I'm not a fan of excising the Phantom Menace from the history of Star Wars. Like, I think that movie has inherent deep flaws, but if you could I'm more of a fan of taking the best parts of Phantom Menace and then cutting them into a recut Attack of the Clones. So all of the young Anakin stuff in Phantom Menace then becomes flashback in Attack of the Clones. And that way you get rid of the really shitty stuff in Phantom Menace, which is the Jar Jar shit and the political shit, the taxation of trade routes shit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my preferred cut.
Here's the way I go. I go 1, Blues Brothers. 2, Ghostbusters 2. 3, Blues Brothers 2000. Because I feel like the story in Blues Brothers 2000 is just, it's too important to skip over. You want to skip over it, but, you know, John Goodman's role is too important in the story.
It is.
And then after that, you go to Saving Silverman.
Uh-huh.
Because the story there with Neil Diamond plays back into the Blues Brothers 2000.
Blues Brothers, right, 2000. Yeah.
And then Ocean's 13.
Uh-huh.
Then Ocean's 11.
Ocean's 11. So you're seeing Ocean's 13 12. Before 11. You're seeing...
Right.
Okay.
Like, a lot of people tell you that, like, it's not important to have the French-Italian guy bobbing and weaving through the lasers, but you have to see it because if you don't see Ocean's 12...
That was Ocean's 12.
Yeah, it's Ocean's 12.
Right.
You go 13, 11, then 12. And after you watch 12, you go to your roof and you jump off of it, and then you never... ever think about the order in which you watch stupid fucking movies from 40 years ago ever again. That's the order.
Finally, Jim wants to know, gives us a fuck, marry, kill that I find kind of interesting.
Okay.
Jason Bourne, James Bond, and Ethan Hunt. Ethan Hunt, of course, Mission Impossible.
Jason Bourne, James Bond, Ethan Hunt. Well, you have to fuck James Bond. He's not the Marion type.
Mm-hmm.
You have to fuck him. And then I would marry Ethan Hunt. I feel like Ethan Hunt wants to settle down. I think he did at some point in that series.
He
of
did,
Michelle
but then,
Monaghan,
but then he
right?
gave it up. Then he all of a sudden he's watching Michelle Monaghan from afar.
Oh, I thought.
To keep her safe.
But then like.
That's why I would marry Jason Bourne, because I feel like Jason Bourne's the guy that wants to settle down. Jason Bourne's the guy who's like, I don't want this life.
Well, Jason Bourne, people forget this, murders an innocent man to become Jason Bourne.
Right.
The very beginning of their flashback in the third movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Ethan Hunt is out there doing good stuff.
Right.
James Bond's out there doing good stuff.
But like, can either of them kill a man with a magazine?
like Jason Bourne can.
I can't believe they made the fourth one.
Jason Bourne, I would marry Jason Bourne. I would fuck James Bond, and I would kill Ethan Hunt.
I still can't believe that in the Jason Bourne movie, the fourth one, they have the bad guy from Ocean's 12 be the main bad guy,
right,
in Jason Bourne, and they conclude the movie in Vegas.
Right.
The final scene's
and
in Vegas.
No one's supposed to understand.
I know.
Like, that's literally the end of Ocean's 13 is Matt Damon and French guy,
right,
in Vegas.
Right. He's like, he has the gun, and he's like, a gun? For real? Like, that would have been great if that's how Jason Bourne ended. Like, you got a gun? For real?
Oh, God. You're right.
Every movie's the same. There's no new stuff.
No new movies.
Like, think about Independence Day came out in 1995, was a hit, and made hundreds of millions of dollars.
Welcome to Earth.
And they didn't make another one for another 20 years.
Yeah.
And now, I'm going to have a Star Wars movie every year until I die.
Oh, isn't that great?
Whether it's next year or 40 years from now. I'm going to have, oh, who's directing episode 33? Oh, it's the Bazinga guy. He's a director now. He's one of the leading directors of these movies.
All right. We thank Brendan Burke for joining us.
I gotta
got
to go.
You got a bunch of shit playing on your computer.
It's fucking pop-up. Pivot to my fucking ass.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. That's the show. Next week will be formal Stanley Cup and Conference Championship picks. And hopefully in the next couple weeks, some Comic-Con people will be on the show as New York Comic-Con is coming up. I'm Greg Wyshynski. And you, sir, are Dave Lozo.
Yep.
And we bid you all a fun farewell. You have any parting words for our good people?
Anything I want to rant about. Anything I want to ramble
any
about.
Any anti-rantas that you want to go on?
I really don't get why anybody likes the first Kingsman movie still. That blows my mind. I don't understand how that movie exists.
That's good. I like the training parts.
That goes on for like 40 minutes.
But the thing I don't understand is the love that scene with Colin Firth and the church gets. Like, I think it's because it's Colin Firth and people are like, oh, wow. Look at, you know.
That scene's dumb.
Look at the guy who had the beautiful the Italian love story and Love Actually. He's killing all those people.
The ending bothers me because in these movies where the world is in trouble, it's always like something vague, like they're going to blow it up or there's a virus they're going to spread or like there's a place called Cracovia they're going to drop out of the
Cracovia.
Sky or whatever the hell. No, Cracovia is Tom Hanks in Terminal. Whatever.
Sarkozia?
Sokovia.
Sokovia, yeah.
Whatever. It's a fictional place that's going to blow up the world. But in Kingsman, it's people murdering each other with their bare hands. So it's much more graphic and intense.
Right.
So this first, like the scene with the church people,
right,
like it's whatever. They do that because they're evil, twisted fucks. But the end, it's just so weird because like he's fighting the lady with the sword
legs. The razor legs.
Yeah. To the not the OJ song, the Casey and the Sunshine Band song, Give It Up. And it's just weird because like that song is playing while a woman is trying to murder her baby with a machete through a bathroom door. That's how they're ending the world. There's a scene where a guy is strangling a woman on a beach and it's na 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 na, baby, give it up, give it up. Like the whole ironic song during fight scene thing is so overdone at this point. And I just, that last part is just, again, the violence doesn't bother me. It's just weird that the tone is just so off there at the end where, like, literally there's a baby crying while a woman swings a cleaver at it. It's just weird, and I hate it, and I don't get it.
Yeah.
But that's just...
That's you.
That was on TBS the other day, so I noticed it.
Oh, characters welcome. Wait, is that USA?
No, that's actually Twitter.
Oh, there it is. It all ties back.
Brings it back in.
All right, thanks, everybody.
See
you next week.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. We also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Park Soup.